Now in a black star-sprinkled sky, a dazzling sliver of sunlight crests the earth. It disappears behind the spinning, watery blue planet as a golden word orbits into view. Universal. Words appear below, an MCA company. The logo fades to black. A yellow flame on a match head pierces the darkness. Strong, aged fingers carry the match and light two new white candles. At sunset, a Jewish family in black Orthodox clothing stands around a dinner table. The candles, a bottle of wine and covered bread, rest on the table. Later, with the room empty, the candles stand alone, burned halfway down. Titles appear. Universal Pictures presents an Amblin Entertainment production. The setting sun fades. The candles burn down to nubs. Another title appears. Schindler's List. As one remaining flame shrinks into a near-empty candlestick holder, the scene drains of color. The flame goes out, and a thread of smoke twists into the darkness. Now, in stark black and white footage, smoke shoots from a steam train's squat chimney. A man on a station platform sets up a folding table and chair. Words appear. September 1939, the German forces defeated the Polish army in 2 weeks. Jews were ordered to register all family members and relocate to major cities. More than 10,000 Jews from the countryside arrive in Krakow daily. The man on the platform gets out a clipboard, ink pad and stamp, stapler and an ink pot. As the clerk sits down and dabs his pen point into the ink, a black-robed man with a woolly white beard approaches with his family.
Name?
Horowitz, Salomon.
The platform is now crowded with people, standing in lines in front of four clerks. The clerks compare each person's papers with a list on a clipboard, then type the names on a new list.
Itzhak Hudas.
Hudas.
Itzhak.
Zucker Helena.
Zucker Helena.
Hirsch
Solomon.
Hirsch Solomon.
Hauptmann Heim.
Weizmann. Weizmann.
Markus. A middle-aged woman wearing a small fashionable hat steps forward. The name Baumann types onto a page. A thin, bearded man steps up. Klein types across a page. A man with a long gray beard and yarmulke steps up. Then a woman with a scarf wrapped around her head. Then two women wearing cloche hats. Typewriter keys punch in name after name. Neumann, Horn, Steiner. Now in a hotel room. Beside a radio with a glowing dial, a man's hands uncork a bottle of Hennessy cognac and pour a drink. The hands lay striped and patterned ties across two double-breasted suits. Then empty a tin of cufflinks onto a bedside table. The man fits a shield-shaped cufflink into his starched cuff. He ties a slipknot into a dark paisley tie and slides it up to the neck of his smooth white silk shirt. Slipping on the dark suit coat, he tucks a pointed handkerchief into his breast pocket. His large hands pull out a stack of Zwota banknotes and a wristwatch from a drawer. Rummaging through another drawer, he finds a few more crumpled and folded Zwota notes. Lastly, he pins a round golden emblem to his lapel, a black swastika on a white background. We enter the foyer of a club, behind the tall, dark-suited gentleman. He has broad shoulders and groomed back hair. He leans casually toward a balding maitre d', whispers and holds a Zwota note to his lapel. The maitre d' discreetly palms the note, nods a smile, and leads him into the club. The maitre d' seats him at a table overlooking an intimate dance floor and small stage. The club is filled with German officers, men in tuxedos, and women in long, elegant dresses. We see the gentleman's handsome features for the first time, a firm chin, strong Roman nose, and high forehead. The maitre d' confers with two waiters.
Here, do you know who that man is?
I know.
The debonair gentleman holds a cigarette in front of his mouth and stares at a slender young woman. She returns his steady, alluring gaze. A brief smile peeks over his hand. Then his attention turns to two SS officers at her table. They smile for a pretty, blonde-haired photographer.
Let's get together, please. Smile.
The gentleman stares intently at their uniforms. The letters SS, shaped like lightning bolts, adorn their black collars. We glimpse an empty reserve table directly in front of the stage. The maitre d' escorts a stylish blonde woman and a German officer, Rolf Tschurda, to a table near the front. Tschurda's first lieutenant follows. Eyeing the new arrivals, the gentleman calmly raises a folded Zwota note. A waiter immediately bends to his ear.
Yes, sir.
Bring them over a round of drinks.
Very good, sir. And who shall I say they are from?
You can say they are from me.
The waiter smiles nervously and takes the bill. The gentleman takes a long drag on his cigarette and gazes across the room. At Tschurda's table, the waiter sets down three small cognac glasses and a bottle of Martell. Tschurda frowns with confusion.
From the gentleman.
Where?
He motions across the room.
You know him? Find out who he is.
Yes, sir.
The first lieutenant gets up. Tschurda smiles at his date.
Agnieszka, I would give anything to hear you sing tonight. Better know you want.
You embarrass me.
Tschurda watches the gentleman shake hands with his first lieutenant. Tschurda frowns as his aide sits down.
What are you doing?
Tschurda stands up.
Stay.
He crosses the dance floor. The gentleman meets him with a firm handshake.
How are you doing? You'd leave a woman alone at a table in a place like this?
He escorts Tschurda's date.
Sweetheart, you're the picture of loneliness. Lovely fragrance, you're breaking my heart. An extra chair, please. Vodka for my friend. For the lady. Colonel.
Later, three dancing girls saunter across the dance floor. They wear bowler hats, skimpy black jackets, and fishnet stockings. A German officer belts down a shot.
Come to the table, girls! Drink with us!
The officer, Dieter Rieder, grins and claps heartily.
Come to us! Marry us!
The civilian gentleman watches him with an unwavering gaze, then passes a handful of Zwota notes to the waiter. Later, the gentleman sits at a long, food-filled table with all of the officers and dancing girls. As the officers talk, the gentleman consults the maitre d'.
Thank you.
I'll tell you what I mean, like, comrade.
2 days after the Lord bastard all choose and to wear the star, Jewish tailors are turning him out when he grows in a variety of fabrics at fleece lot each.
Tell me about your cellar, man.
I have an excellent German Riesling, 1937.
French, a Bordeaux, Chateau Lotour, 28, 29.
It's as if they have no idea what kind of law it is. As if it's the emblem of a riding club.
The Margot, 29. Burgundy, then. Romani Conti, 37.
It's human nature. We do this to avoid that.
That's what they have done since thousands of years. It's what they do. They weather the storm.
But this storm is different. This is not the Romans. This storm is the SS.
The photographer takes pictures. Reader flirts and stuffs his face. Another officer playfully kisses a young woman. The debonair gentleman stands at the head of the crowded table, leading them all in song. The maitre d' escorts a high-ranking officer and his female companion to the reserved table in the deserted front of the club.
Martin? Yes, sir. Who is that man?
That's Oskar Schindler.
The photographer takes pictures. Tschurda leans in front of his girl to be next to Schindler. Now, group shots. Schindler with all of the officers. Schindler with all of the women. Lastly, Schindler with the high-ranking officer, Oberfuhrer Julian Scherner. Daytime on a city street. A 10-year-old boy marches in front of a parade of German foot soldiers. A smiling 5-year-old girl pushes a little baby stroller alongside the troops. On a sidewalk, a few SS soldiers jeer at a bearded, black-dressed Jew. With a bayonet, an SS soldier cuts off one of the man's long, orthodox curls beside his ear and stuffs it mockingly in place under his own cap. On another sidewalk, Oskar Schindler, wearing his swastika pin on a thick leather blazer, passes a long line of Jews, all wearing armbands adorned with the Star of David. A loudspeaker truck and a trolley roll past. Words appear as Schindler strides into a crowded building. The Judenrat, the Jewish council comprised of 24 elected Jews personally responsible for carrying out the orders of the regime in Krakow, such as drawing up lists for work details, food, and housing. A place to lodge complaints. Now, in a large room filled with desks.
The cannot be confiscated.
I do not know the answer.
Article 47.
No, you don't
village
know anything.
I am
familiar with the Hague Convention.
They come into our house and tell us we don't live there anymore. It now belongs to a certain SS officer.
Please, I only know what they tell me, and what they tell me changes from day to day.
Aren't you supposed to be able to help?
I'm familiar with it.
I mean, what if I just took this thing off? What are they going to do about it?
They will shoot you. Why don't you stop?
Itzhak Stern. I'm looking for Itzhak Stern.
All eyes turn to a small man in the back.
Are you Itzhak Stern or not?
I am. Where can we talk?
Stern leads the tall, imposing Schindler into an office. Stern is a thin man wearing a pinstripe suit and round spectacles.
There's a company you did the books for on Lipovitz Street. Made what? Pots and pans?
By law, I have to tell you, sir, I'm a Jew.
Well, I'm a German, so there we are.
Schindler pours a drink from a flask. Stern declines.
A good company, you think?
Modestly successful.
I know nothing about enamelware. Do you?
I was just the accountant.
Simple engineering, though, wouldn't you think? Change the machines around. Whatever you do, you can make other things, couldn't you? Field kits. Mess kits. Army contracts.
He drinks a shot.
Once the war ends, forget it. But for now, it's great. You can make a fortune, don't you think?
I think most people right now have other priorities.
Like what?
I'm sure you'll do just fine once you get the contracts. In fact, the worse things get, the better you'll do.
Oh, I can get the signatures I need. That's the easy part. Finding the money to buy the company. That's all.
You don't have any money.
Not that kind of money. You know anybody? Jews, yeah. Investors. You must have contacts in the Jewish business community working here.
What community? Jews can no longer own businesses. That's why this one's in receivership.
Ah, but they wouldn't own it. I'd own it. I'd pay them back in product, pots and pans.
Pots and pans?
Something they can use. Something they can feel in their hands. They can trade it on the black market, do whatever they want. Everybody's happy. If you want, you could run the company for me.
He sits back in a chair and puffs on a cigarette. Stern smiles wryly.
Let me understand. They put up all the money. I do all the work. What if you don't mind my asking, would you do?
I'd make sure it's known the company's in business. I'd see that it had a certain panache. That's what I'm good at. Not the work. The presentation.
He fans out his hands. His wide blue eyes stare straight at Stern. Stern looks blankly at him. Schindler gazes pointedly at the small, lean, middle-aged man and takes a slow drag on his cigarette. Stern blinks slowly.
I'm sure I don't know anybody who'll be interested in this.
Well, they should be, Itzhak Stern. Tell them they should be.
Outside, a young Jewish man in his 20s, Poldek Pfefferberg, stops outside a shop window. As a girl skipping rope passes him, he discreetly removes his Star of David armband. Later, he steps into a church, dips his finger into the stoup of holy water at the entrance, and makes the sign of the cross over his head and chest. In the middle pews on the left, about a dozen men huddle together, bent prayerfully forward, and secretly writing in small notepads.
Wool, mean color. It's a nice coat. She'll trade it for ration coupons.
You have a truckload of wicks? What am I going to do with a truckload of wicks?
Poldek Pfefferberg joins two men in front, Goldberg and Chilovich. Pfefferberg pulls out a black jar.
What? You don't recognize this?
It's shoe polish.
In metal containers?
You ask for shoe polish.
In metal containers. Metal containers. This is glass. It's not what I asked for.
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
What's the difference?
My client sold it to his client who sold it to the German army. Only by the time it got there, because of the freezing cold, it broke. All 10,000 units.
This is not my problem.
This is not his problem.
This is not your problem.
This is not my problem.
All right. The German army wants to find out where it came from. I'm going to make sure they find out.
Now it's your problem.
You be quiet. Metal containers.
Hello. Pardon me for interfering, but that's a nice shirt. Nice shirt. Do you know where I can find a nice shirt like that?
Schindler sits in front of them. The huddled men behind Pfefferberg and his friends suddenly leave.
Like this?
It's illegal to buy or sell anything on the street. We don't do that. We're here to pray.
Goldberg nudges Chilovich, and they both lean forward in prayer.
Do you have any idea how much a shirt like this costs?
Oh, nice things cost money.
Goldberg and Chilovich walk away. Pfefferberg glances at them, then levels a careful, searching stare at Schindler.
How many?
He pulls out his notepad.
I'm going to need some other things, too, as things come up.
This won't be a problem.
From time to time.
The scene changes to hundreds of Jews filing across a bridge. Words appear. March 20th, 1941. Deadline for entering the ghetto. Edict 4491 establishes a closed Jewish district south of the Vistula River. Residency in the walled ghetto is compulsory. All Jews from Krakow and surrounding areas are forced from their homes and required to crowd into an area of only 16 square blocks. In the crowd, Poldek Pfefferberg glances warily around. His elegant wife Mila walks beside him. A young family walks past, Henry and Monsi Rosner, their six-year-old son Oleg, and Henry's brother Leo. An older, well-dressed couple, Mr. and Mrs. Dresner, and their children Danka and Yannick. In the ghetto, long lines of Jews wait to check in. Now, inside a luxurious apartment, an SS officer calmly watches a stout businessman hurry around his study, gathering pictures and a painting. The stout man, Mr. Nussbaum, heads into a dining room and throws them in a suitcase. Sorting silverware, Mrs. Nussbaum runs a calming hand over his brow, then hurries to sort a stack of photos. Under the watchful eye of a leather-jacketed Gestapo agent, Mr. Nussbaum retrieves a silver urn from a sideboard. Later, the agent leads the maid and the fur-coated Mrs. Nussbaum out the front door. Mr. Nussbaum stops in the doorway and with a silver spoon pries off a mezuzah, a small doorpost scroll. He kisses it, puts it in his pocket, and heads downstairs. Outside, the maid pulls a small loaded wagon into the street. Mr. Nussbaum tears his wife away from a final gaze at their home. As they join a constant throng of departing Jews, a car pulls up. Schindler gets out and shakes the SS officer's hand.
This is obviously the right place. How are you doing?
A boy throws horse dung at Mrs. Nussbaum. She bats it away with her purse. Inside the Nussbaum's apartment, Schindler walks in and takes a look around the spacious dining room. A chandelier hangs from the ceiling. Oil paintings cover the walls.
This is the Richtige.
Why
Mr. and Mrs. Nussbaum drag their possessions into a dingy tenement building. Schindler lies down on their elegant bed. Mrs. Nussbaum, carrying a cloth-covered painting and a hatbox, enters a crowded and dirty room. She pushes through into a vacant, completely bare room. Mr. Nussbaum follows her in. His foot trips on a small step. In their old bed, Schindler relaxes with his hands behind his head.
It could not be better.
It could be worse.
Oh, tell me. How on earth could it possibly be worse?
Dzień dobry.
A family files in.
Dzień dobry. Dzień
dobry. Three men, two women, and a child. Outside, in line, the black marketeer Goldberg meets up with Pfefferberg.
Oh, Goldberg. Goldberg. What's this?
The Judenrat is its own police now, Polberg.
Don't say.
Ordnungsdienst.
I'm a policeman now, could you believe it?
I know it's hard to believe.
Oh, no, it's not hard to believe.
It's a good record, Polberg. The only record here. Look, maybe I could put in a good word for Judenrat's superiors.
Your superiors?
Oh, come on. They're not as bad as everyone says. Well, the worst than everyone says, but it's a lot of money. A lot of money.
Give me my housing assignment.
The uniformed Goldberg hands him a document.
You look funny in that head, Goldberg. You look like a clown, you know.
He wears a Jewish policeman's hat with a Star of David on the front. Now, Itzhak Stern with two older men.
He's a very important man. Just give him 2 minutes of your time, since when did time cost money? Just sit down and listen. Please, sir.
They climb into Schindler's car.
For each 1,000 you invest, I will repay you with
200
kilos of anomaly a month to begin in July and to continue for 1 year, after which time we're even. That's it. It's very simple.
Not good enough.
It's not good enough.
Not good enough.
Look where you're living. Look where you've been put.
Not good enough. A couple of months ago, you'll be right. Not anymore.
Money, still money.
No, it is not. That's why we're here. Trade goods, that's the only currency that'll be worth anything in the ghetto. Things have changed, my friend. Did I call this meeting? You told Mr. Stern you wanted to speak to me. I'm here. I've made you a fair offer.
Fair would be a percentage on the company.
Forget the whole thing. Get out.
In the back seat, the two old men exchange a shrewd glance.
How do we know that you will do what you say?
Because I said I would. You want a contract? To be upheld by what court? I said what I'll do. That's our contract.
The two men lean close. Schindler pours a drink from a silver flask and holds it out to Stern. Stern glances impassively at it, then looks away. Later, the investors hand him stack after stack of money strewn across a table. In a factory, Schindler signals a lone worker to start up a conveyor. Schindler and Stern in the factory office.
The standard SS rate for Jewish skilled laborers is 7 marks a day, 5 for unskilled and women. This is what you pay the Reich Economic Office. The Jews themselves receive nothing. The Poles, you pay wages. Generally, they get a little more. Are you listening?
What was that about the SS? The rate? What?
The Jewish worker's salary. You pay it directly to the SS, not to the worker. He gets nothing.
But it's less. It's less than what they would pay a Pole.
It's less.
That's the point I'm trying to make. Poles cost more. Why should I hire Poles?
Stern in the ghetto.
An enamelware factory over at the Polish Street. It's owned by a German, but it's outside the ghetto. So you can barter for extra goods, for eggs, I don't know what you need, with the Polish workers. You can't get it here. Also, he's asking for 10 healthy women for the...
I'm healthy.
Bring your sister, okay?
In a plaza, Pfefferberg and others watch fellow Jews lining up in front of Nazi clerks.
You need to convince him you have a trade, something valuable to the war effort.
Like what?
I'm a musician.
What did you do? Your name goes on a list?
I hear your name goes on a list and they put you on trucks. And
no, that's not true.
You're a musician?
Yeah.
I'd find a good hiding place if I were you.
I'm not going to hide like some animal. There are places to hide.
Some men and women are boarded onto trucks. A well-dressed young man presents his work card to a clerk.
I'm a graduate of the University of Lvov. I used to work at the hydroelectric station in Rosnov.
Blauschein.
The clerk puts a sticker on his card and stamps it.
I want to get the necessary papers because this card is not good anymore. If you can stay in this line all day, you'll still get one of these. They are no good. You'll have to leave the line now, then you'll get a blue card, the Blauschein. To say that you are an essential worker. I'll get these papers for you at Pankiewicz Pharmacies. Just there, look.
In uniforms, Hilevich and Goldberg stroll past Pfefferberg.
Enjoying the weather, Paulek?
Enjoying the lines.
Need some shoe polish?
A metal container, maybe.
Not essential. I think you misunderstand the meaning of the word.
No Blauschein, sir. Stand over there. Move. Next.
A soldier escorts the man away.
Not essential. I teach history and literature. This is when it's not essential.
Stern and a young man forge a document.
It's metal polisher.
Stern blows the ink dry, then wads the document into a ball.
It's not right. It's very good. He's 53 years old. It's too new.
Stern bites off the document's corners, then pours tea on it. Later, he grabs the history teacher as he's about to board a truck.
You're crazy. You left it in your drawer. How many times have I told you? Your work certificate you keep in your pocket at all times. And you leave your office in your drawer. How many times have I told you?
I'm a metal polisher.
The history teacher presents his new work card to a clerk. Stern watches at a distance as the clerk stamps it. Now, in the factory.
Take the round sheet of tin, dip it in soapy emulsion, then place it centrally in the press.
A workman presses a button. The round piece of tin is squashed in a hollow, pillar-sized press. Emulsion leaks out. The press separates. The history teacher marvels as the workman pulls out a pot.
We obtain the soup pot. The soup pot. Soup pot.
Boss, this is boss. Stay together.
Stern leads a group of people to the front of one of the lines.
I have 10 work permits here for the Deutsche Enamelfabriken signed by Mr. Benker and myself.
If it's carbonized, clean it with a file. But don't touch both the electrodes at the same time. You'll get electrocuted. Here, have a try.
Stern guides two young men. More learn at the factory.
Roll the metal under the press. And be very careful unless you want your fingers to become part of the teapot.
Patient?
I'm a writer. I play the flute.
But Moses is a skilled metal worker. He can make tin pots, he can make tanks, he can make whatever Mr. Schindler asks. He's highly skilled. Give him your card. Moses, give him your card.
A woman dips a bowl in white fluid.
Now, dip the basin with the tongs into the enamel solution. And after swiveling it around, carefully place it aside to drip dry.
The Rosners and their son Oleg watch the process.
Whatever he asks you, allow me just to represent you and speak for you. Don't say a word.
Filing, billing, keeping track of my appointments, shorthand, typing, obviously. How is your typing?
All right.
Please.
As painters refurbish his factory office, Schindler has a young woman sit behind a typewriter. He sits in front of her, folds his arms, and stares at her smooth, pretty face. Another girl, a brunette, sits at the typewriter and smiles. Now a tall blonde. Schindler kindly slides back the return carriage for her. She grins. Next, a young lady squints and leans close to the paper. another smiling blonde, a thin, wavy-haired brunette with a coy smile. Schindler leans on the desk and gazes at a stunning young woman who returns his unwavering stare. Now a despondently slouching Schindler as a gruff, middle-aged woman types away, a cigarette dangling from her lips.
You need a secretary, Tuan.
I don't know how. They're all so qualified.
You have to choose.
Outside, Schindler poses with 20 beautiful secretaries.
Big smile, big smile.
A photographer takes a picture. At a lavish dinner party, complete with fine drinks and caviar, Schindler introduces beautiful young women to SS officers. Morning. As Schindler rattles off a list, Pfefferberg assembles smuggled goods from small boats, from behind medicine cabinets, and from underneath railroad ties.
Box teas are good, coffee, pate, kielbasa sausage, cheeses, beluga caviar. And, of course, who could live without German cigarettes? Get as many as you can find. And some more fresh fruit. The real rarities, oranges, lemons, pineapples. I need several boxes of Cuban cigars, the best. And dark unsweetened chocolate, not in the shape of lady fingers. It's a chunk of chocolate, big as my hand. You sample as wine tastings. You're going to need lots of cognac, the best. Hennessy. Dom Perignon champagne. Get Le Panon sardines. And, try to find nylon stockings.
At their desks, SS officers receive letters and gift baskets from Oskar Schindler.
To announce the fully operational status of Deutsche Emaille Fabrik, manufacturers of superior enamelware crockery, expressly designed and crafted for military use. Utilizing only the most modern equipment, DEF's staff of highly skilled and experienced artisans and journeymen deliver a product of unparalleled quality, enabling me to proffer with absolute confidence and pride a full line of field and kitchenware unsurpassable in all respects by my competitors. See attached list and available colors. Anticipating the enclosed bids will meet with your approval, and looking forward to a long and mutually prosperous association, I extend to you in advance my sincerest gratitude and very best regards, Oskar Schindler.
Schindler on the factory floor.
For next Thursday. 900, no, make it 10 for Wednesday. All this stuff here goes to Madras's factory. Tuesday of next week.
A long train of secretaries follows him. SS officers and lastly, Oberfuhrer Julian Scherner each stamp an invoice. Supply trucks leave the factory. Now, in Schindler's office with Stern.
My father was fond of saying you need three things in life. A good doctor, a forgiving priest, and a clever accountant.
He pours two glasses of cognac and presses one into Stern's hand.
The first two, I've never had much use for. But the third...
He sits behind his desk and raises his glass. Stern returns a baffled, blinking stare.
Just pretend, for Christ's sake.
Stern briefly raises his glass.
Is that all?
Schindler sets down his glass and leans forward.
I'm trying to thank you. I'm saying I couldn't have done this without you. The usual thing would be to acknowledge my gratitude. It would also, by the way, be the courteous thing. You're welcome.
He stares unmoved. Schindler downs his cognac, then drinks Stern's.
Get out of here.
Stern leaves. Morning. A young woman in a nightgown answers Schindler's front door. An elegant blonde woman stands outside.
Zanowska, who is it?
Later, Schindler sits fidgeting beside the elegant woman. Wearing a rumpled silk robe, he smiles nervously as his young secretary hurriedly gathers her things.
She's so embarrassed. Look at her.
He stuffs his hands in the pockets of his robe and paces. The elegant woman stands motionless with her back to the vacating secretary.
You know something? You would like her.
Oscar, please.
What?
I don't have to like her.
You would
just talk. Because you do. It doesn't work that way.
The secretary leaves. Schindler sinks into a chair. He looks at the floor and nervously bounces one knee.
You've done well here.
You look wonderful.
Nighttime. Schindler and the elegant woman pass a doorman.
Be careful of the step, miss.
Mrs. Schindler, Merrick.
The doorman nods. Emily Schindler glares. Oscar shrugs and smiles helplessly. Later, at an intimate nightclub, Emily smiles affectionately at Oscar.
It's not a charade, all this.
A charade? How could it be a charade?
The car, the apartment.
Wait a minute. Take a guess. How many people are on my payroll?
Oscar.
My father, at the height of his success, had 50. I've got 350. 350 workers on the factory floor with one purpose.
To make pots and pans?
To make money. For me.
He props his chin on his hand and gazes into her eyes.
Does anyone ask about me?
Back home? Everybody. All the time.
She looks into his eyes.
I won't soon forget the name Schindler here, I can tell you that. Oscar Schindler, they'll say. Everybody remembers him. He did something extraordinary. He did something no one else did. He came here with nothing. A suitcase. And built a bankrupt company into a major manufactory. And left with a steamer trunk, two steamer trunks full of money. All the riches of the world.
She fondly runs a hand over his hair.
It's comforting to see that nothing's changed.
You're wrong, Emily. There's no way I could have known this before, but there was always something missing. In every business I tried, I can see now it wasn't me that failed. Something was missing. Even if I'd known what it was, there's nothing I could have done about it because you can't create this thing. And it makes all the difference in the world between success and failure.
Luck.
He kisses her hand.
War.
Later, they dance. Oscar wears a black tuxedo. Emily wears a black velvet dress, with her blonde hair rolled into a chic coil. A pretty young woman dances with an officer and stares at Schindler. He stares back as Emily rests her head on his cheek. The girl smiles. Later, Emily and Oscar in bed.
Should I stay?
It's a beautiful city.
I asked you if I should stay.
It's up to you.
She sits up and stares him squarely in the eye.
Promise me, Oscar, no doorman or maitre d' will ever presume I'm anyone other than Mrs. Schindler. And I'll stay.
Later, she leaves on a train.
Goodbye, darling.
He squeezes her hand through the window.
Ourselves and freedom for self.
She smiles as the train rolls away. In the factory, Schindler's office looks out over the factory floor. Schindler opens a report beside a sumptuous meal.
I could try to read this, or I could eat my lunch while it's still hot. We're doing well.
Yes.
Better this month than last?
Yes.
Any reason to think next month will be worse?
The war could end.
Schindler sips a glass of wine. Stern picks up the discarded report and remains standing in front of Schindler.
What?
There is a machinist outside who'd like to thank you personally for giving him a job. Every day he comes, he's very grateful. It'll just take a minute.
Schindler sits back impatiently and chews. Stern goes to the door.
Mr. Wernstein.
Stern ushers in an old man with one arm. Schindler dabs his mouth and rises to shake the man's hand.
I want to thank you, sir, for giving me the opportunity to work.
You're welcome. I'm sure you're doing a great job.
VSS beat me up. They would have killed me, but I'm essential to the war effort. Thanks to you.
That's great.
I work hard for you.
I'm sure you do.
I'll continue to work hard for you.
That's great. Thanks.
God bless you, sir.
All right.
You're a good man.
He turns to Stern.
He saved my life.
Yes, he did.
God bless him.
No.
God bless you.
Schindler turns his back, waves, and stares distantly out his window. Stern leaves with Mr. Lowenstein. Later, Stern follows Schindler outside and hands him a bottle of cognac and a present.
Sorry, Herr Director, but you're running very late. This is for the Obersturmbahn Führer, sir, and this is for his niece, Greta. It's about
By the
Greta
way, Essendorf. Don't ever do that to me again.
Go, drive, don't bother.
Did you happen to notice that that man had one arm?
Did he?
Schindler climbs into the back of his limousine.
What's his use?
Very useful.
How?
Very useful. Success!
Morning. Jewish workers file out of the ghetto. A smiling Mr. Lowenstein catches up with 10-year-old Danka Dresner. Dozens of Jewish workers trudge up a slippery, snow-covered street. A German Kubelwagen Jeep pulls up. An officer climbs out and barks at the Jewish policeman.
Baseballschaufel werden ausgeladen. Jeder nimmt sich eine und dann wird die Straße gereinigt.
We'll be late for work.
A truck pulls up. Two soldiers hop out and start handing shovels to the workers. Schindler has a drink in Lieutenant Commander Rolf Schurter's office.
You shouldn't think of them as yours, Oscar. You need to understand that some of the officers here don't give a damn about production. To them, it's a matter of national priority that Jews be made to shovel snow. It's got nothing to do with reality, Oscar. You know it, and I know it. Jews shoveling snow. It's got a ritual significance.
Two officers grab Mr. Lowenstein.
Come with me.
I am... an essential worker.
Essential worker?
Yes. I work for Oskar Schindler.
Essential worker for Oskar Schindler.
Yes. 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 Twice as useless.
I lost a day of production, Rolf.
Young Danka Dresner stares after Mr. Lowenstein.
Danka, look at the snow. Look at the snow. Look at the snow.
A few yards away, an officer shoots him in the head.
I lost a worker. I expect to be compensated.
File a grievance with the economic office. It's your right.
Would it do any good?
Of course not.
A big shot from the SS budget and construction office came to lunch and he told us that to believe the Jewish skilled worker had a place in Reich economics was a treasonable idea.
Under Lowenstein's head, dark blood pools in the snow.
A one-armed machinist, Oscar?
He was a metal press operator.
Schurter smiles. Schindler stares earnestly.
Quite skilled.
Later, in his bed, Schindler kisses Ingrid, the flirtatious girl from the club. They roll around, naked and entangled in a sheet. Out in the hall, Pfefferberg wanders toward the bedroom. Ingrid rolls on top, her firm young breasts above his broad chest. Pfefferberg glances in and takes a bolstering breath.
Herr Direktor.
I'm Stern, is that you?
No, it's Poldek. It's about Stern.
Later at a train station.
Leave your luggage on the platform. Clearly label it. Main name first, then your surname. Do not bring your baggage with you. It will follow you later.
Schindler wanders through the station. Men and women write on their suitcases with chalk and board boxcars. Schindler stops by a clerk skimming through a list.
Stern!
He's on the list.
He is. Well, let's find him.
I'm sorry, you can't have him. He's on the list. If he were an essential worker, he would
not
be on the
list. I'm talking to a clerk. What is your name?
Sir, the list is correct.
I didn't ask you about the list. I asked you your name.
Klaus Tauber.
He writes it in a notebook.
Tauber.
Hauptstadtführer, this gentleman thinks a mistake's been made.
My plant manager is somewhere on this train. If it leaves with him on it, it'll disrupt production and the armaments board will want to know why.
Is he on the list?
Yes, sir. It's a Stern.
Well, the list is correct, sir. There's nothing I can do.
What is your name?
My name is Kunda. Hauptstadtführer Kunda.
K-U-N.
And what's yours?
Schindler. S-C-H-I-N-D-L-E-R. Gentlemen, thank you very much. I think I can guarantee you, you'll both be in southern Russia before the end of the month. Good day.
They frown and watch him walk off.
Stern! Stern!
Stern!
It's Art Stern!
The clerk and officer join in the hunt.
It's Art Stern!
Stern! Stern! It's Art Stern!
Stern!
Sir.
He passes Stern's face in a boxcar window.
Stern!
Head back. My apologies.
Stop the train!
I apologize.
He's here! Stop the train!
Stop the train!
The wheels stop. The officer opens the boxcar door. Stern steps out and heaves a few breaths.
Sign here, initial there. Makes no difference to us, you understand? This one, that one. It's the inconvenience to the list. It's the paperwork.
I somehow left my work card at home. I tried to explain them. It was a mistake, but I'm sorry, I'm stupid.
What if I got here 5 minutes later? Then where would I be?
Putting on his hat, Stern looks dumbfounded at Schindler, then glances around nervously as they leave. Now, Jewish policemen push loaded carts of luggage into a warehouse. They steer the carts around a huge 12-foot-high mound of clothes to a stack of suitcases as high as the ceiling. Guarded closely, Jewish workmen sort through them, case by case, throwing clothes onto the tall mound. Eyeglasses onto a 4-foot-tall pile, and shoes onto another 8-foot-tall heap. Another man collects a basketful of fine tableware and a menorah candelabra. He sorts it into rows of tall shelves as German soldiers tag and record everything. A workman dumps a suitcase full of photos onto a table. The pile overflows with pictures of families, weddings, and children. Jewelers with Star of David armbands sit at a long table. One with an eyepiece scrutinizes a bracelet. Another weighs a gold ring on a scale. A third, with thick-lensed glasses, evaluates a pile of diamonds. Using tweezers, he holds a small diamond inches from his face, then puts it aside. A man empties a handkerchief full of gold-capped teeth in front of him. The jeweler slowly takes off his glasses and stares at the pile. Words appear. Jewish town, Krakow ghetto, winter of 42. Huddled around a trash fire are Pfefferberg, the history teacher, one of Schindler's investors, the policeman Hilovich, and the wealthy Nussbaums.
I woke up from a dream this morning.
I was broke and sharing a room with 12 people I didn't know. Only to discover I was broke and sharing a room with 12 people I didn't know.
You laugh about it?
I have to laugh.
You're living behind walls.
The walls I can deal with. It's the restrictions to my life I'm tired of.
Those walls keep them out. That's all I care about.
I like it here. There's a kind of, I don't know, ancestral squalor to it all.
You're a slave.
No one envies anymore.
I'm smart.
What? Oh, yes, no, you're smart. You're a real genius.
You had your chance.
Today I actually found time to organize a thought. I can't remember the last time I did that.
When's the last time we did this? When's the last time we stood around and talked?
No one ordered me onto a truck today. No one took my business away from me.
Don't really have a business to take.
There's nowhere down from here. This is it. This is the bottom.
The ghetto is liberty.
Now, in a convertible staff car, an officer gives a tour to Untersturmführer Amon Gert.
This street divides the ghetto just about in half. Right side, ghetto A. Civil employees, industrial workers, and so on. Left side, ghetto B, surplus labor, the elderly and infirm mostly, which is where you will want to start, huh? Do you have any questions, sir?
Yeah, well, it's top down, I'm fucking freezing.
Washoff labor camp, under construction.
We expect a labor force of 25 to 30,000, segregated, of course. The men in the barracks near the quarry, the women on the other side
my
of the quarry.
My place is where?
There, sir.
Where?
Yes, a villa.
You call that a villa?
The synagogue, can you see it?
That's not a villa.
We're planning to turn it into the camp stables.
The house. What's that over there?
Jewish workmen carry a playground slide.
Kindergarten, 51.
20 young women wearing winter coats and scarves on their heads line up in front of Gert.
There they are, sir.
Gert dabs his nose with a white handkerchief.
One of you is a very lucky girl. There is an opening for a job away from all this backbreaking work at my new villa. Which of you has domestic experience?
He watches a delicate girl who doesn't raise her hand.
Yeah, on second thoughts, I don't really want someone else's maid. All those annoying habits I have to undo.
He steps in front of her and beckons her. She steps meekly forward.
I don't want to give you my call. What's your name?
Helen Hughes.
What?
Helen Hughes.
What? I can't hear.
Helen Hughes.
He loosens her plaid shawl and gazes at her smooth, shivering hands. She looks up at him. Her brow creases anxiously and her lips quiver. Gert glances away, takes a puff on his cigarette, then nods to an officer.
Yeah.
The girls march away.
The work!
An officer storms toward Gert.
Take it down! It is not!
She says the foundation was brought wrong. She's got to take it down. I told her it's the barracks at the fucking Hotel Europa. Fucking you bitch engineer. You fucking bitch!
Herr Kommandant! The entire foundation has to be torn down and repoured. If not, there will be at least a subsidence at the southern end of the barracks. Subsidence and then collapse.
You are an engineer?
Yes. My name is Diana Reiter. I'm a graduate of civil engineering from the University of Milan.
I'm educated too, like Karl Marx himself.
Gert steps over and studies the wooden frame of the barracks.
Unterschaffjahre.
Jawohl.
Shoot her.
Was?
Herr Kommandant, I'm only trying to do my job.
Yeah, I'm doing mine.
Sir, she's foreman of construction.
We're not going to have arguments with these people.
Well.
The officer takes her arm.
Oh, shoot her. Here, on my authority.
The officer, Corporal Huyar, throws her down beside the barracks. A few yards away, Helen Hirsch, watches Huyar aim his Luger pistol at her head.
It will take more than that.
I'm sure you're right.
A bullet pierces her forehead and she collapses. Blood streams onto the snow.
Take it down, repour it, rebuild it, like she said.
We have more to see, but we have only one more hour of life.
Morning. Schindler shaves briskly. In his own bathroom, Gert shaves delicately. Later, Gert addresses his troops in the camp. As he speaks, we glimpse events in the Jewish ghetto.
Today is history. Today will be remembered. Years from now, the young will ask with wonder about this day. Today is history, and you are part of it.
A rabbi wears a prayer shawl and tefillin.
600 years ago, when elsewhere they were footing the blame for the Black Death, Casimir the Great, so-called, told the Jews they could come to Krakow.
The Dresdners share a meal of bread.
They came. They trundled their belongings into the city. They settled. They took hold. They prospered. In business, science, education, the arts.
Stern looks out his window at clerks setting up tables in the street.
Nothing. And they flourish.
Stern buttons his vest.
For 6 centuries, there has been a Jewish Krakow. Think about that. By this evening, those 6 centuries are a rumor. They never happened. Today is history.
In the countryside, Schindler and Ingrid ride horses. German trucks roll into the ghetto. Words appear. Liquidation of the ghetto, March 13, 1943. Soldiers fall into line. Gert and his aides study a map.
I think we will start with ghetto B.
More soldiers jump out of trucks. 5 hold tight leashes on muzzled German shepherds.
All right.
We'll start from both sides?
No, I would like you to start over there.
Right side.
All right. Yeah. And move around.
All right.
On a grassy bluff, Schindler and Ingrid slowly ride their horses to the edge and look out at the quiet, misty streets of the ghetto. Ingrid turns fretfully to Schindler, who stares at the streets with a perplexed frown. Now in Mr. and Mrs. Dresner's apartment. Mr. Dresner peers out the window as Mrs. Dresner draws Danka close. SS troops run down a street toward a frail old woman carrying buckets. They veer around her. They shout at the buildings and turn down side streets and alleyways. In an apartment, a small boy's eyes are wide with fear. His older brother stares vacantly and trembles. An older woman moves back a floor lamp, then tears down a piece of wallpaper and reveals a secret nook. She takes out a tin, sits down, and opens it. She empties a small velvet pouch onto a table, sparkling diamonds and gold rings. She breaks apart a slice of bread and wraps a piece around a diamond. Soldiers with rifles swarm onto apartment landings. They push open windows and doors. As the woman wraps all of the jewelry into wads of bread, another woman and a young girl quietly stuff pieces into their mouths. On the landing, soldiers drive families out of their apartments as they throw on coats.
Gut, rein, das kann ich. Gut, rein.
A soldier shoves a man onto the floor, steps on the back of his neck, and aims his Luger pistol inches from his head. His cap blows to shreds. Blood runs across the floor. Jews clutch their work cards and rush downstairs. The Rosners pass a stern soldier who smiles and tweaks their little son Oleg's cheek. They pass by. Then the soldier yanks suitcases from passing men and women. The rabbi, who chanted earlier, walks downstairs. A soldier grabs his work card and throws it. The rabbi picks it up and keeps moving. Soldiers on all the landings empty suitcases over the railings. In a room, Mila Pfefferberg gazes fearfully and backs against a bed. Her husband rushes in.
We're getting out through the sewers. I have to check if they're clear. Mila, pack some things, nothing bigger than this.
I can't go in the sewers. I told you I won't go in the sewers.
Poldek grabs her and kisses her urgently.
You can go. Yes, you can.
He strides out.
I won't go in the sewers.
In a deserted street, Poldek Pfefferberg pries up a manhole cover with two spoons. Clutching a flashlight in his teeth, he lowers himself into the steaming sewer, then replaces the lid. Isaac Stern hurries out of his building.
You're car, Jew!
He checks all his pockets.
Deine Papiere, Jude! Deine Papiere, Jude!
He pulls it out.
That line.
A policeman takes him away.
Deine Karte!
A 12-year-old boy suddenly bolts from his father's side. A soldier takes aim. The father grabs the rifle. The soldier pushes him away and kills him. The man drops at Stern's feet. Stern holds up his hands in surrender as he's led away with a group. A woman clutches the dead father. Two other soldiers haul the boy back in their arms. The first soldier takes aim. The bullet rips out of the boy's back, narrowly missing the soldiers. One of them drops the boy in a heap, grabs the first soldier's rifle, and scolds him. A chemist rushes into a pharmacy and grabs bottles. A tall German soldier with a submachine gun leads children, women, and men down a sidewalk past a hospital. Inside, a doctor fills a syringe with a poison from a bottle labeled Truchizna, then puts drops into water glasses. Three soldiers enter the hospital. A nurse tilts up a weak patient's head. She helps the patient drink the poison. The soldiers climb a staircase. The nurse pours another drink into a limp man's mouth. The soldiers climb another level. The nurse moves to a frail woman with short, thinning hair. The woman drinks, then rests her head. She looks up at the nurse and manages a serene smile. The soldiers reach a closed door. A soldier aims at one of the beds. Blood spatters from bullet holes. The soldiers check the rest of the patients, limp and lifeless. In a corner, the doctor and nurse glare defiantly. On the street, the chemist drags along a stumbling woman. A young soldier stops him.
As good as that. Leave her. Give me, Mama. Just let me drink her inside.
Blood spouts from her head and streams across the chemist's face.
Can't join her? Can't join the line?
He throws the chemist toward a group sitting on the curb.
Women to the left! Men to right! Women to the left!
A soldier tears Monsi Rosner away from her husband, Henry, and little boy, Oleg.
Women to the left! Men to the right!
Mrs. Dresner and her daughter Danka share fleeting words with Mr. Dresner and his son Yannick. Soldiers pull little boys from pleading mothers' arms. In the sewers, Pfefferberg runs along a narrow walkway behind three other men. Pfefferberg ducks and hides around a corner. Later, he peers out of a steaming manhole, then climbs up. Dead men and women cover the ground. He staggers at the sight of a blood-streaked wall, then trips in a dark puddle. He scrambles to his feet and takes off down a side street littered with suitcases. He returns to his apartment.
Mila!
He whirls around and frowns coldly outside. Mila shuffles along a street with other women. They wear wool coats and thick winter scarves around their heads. In the middle of the pack, Mrs. Dresner and Danka abruptly duck out of the group and slip through a gate. Hand in hand, they double back through an alley, round a corner, and come upon bloodied, dead bodies sprawled across suitcases. They enter a room where a woman is about to close a trapdoor. She lets Danka climb in.
You had a blouse, honey.
No, she doesn't matter anymore. They are cleaning out the ghetto.
There is not enough room for you.
What are you talking about? We tried it before. There's more than enough room.
I changed my mind.
Oh, look at the space in there. Now look at me. You are just scared.
I can fit the girl, but not you.
Mama, I can be close.
Stay where you are. I'd rather you be here than who knows where.
The trapdoor closes and a concealing rug slides into place. Pfefferberg runs down the suitcase-littered street, looks over his shoulder, then quickly starts clearing away the suitcases. Gert leads two dogs and a squad of soldiers toward him. Pfefferberg snaps his heels to attention and salutes.
Now, Commandant!
Very good saluting.
I respectfully report I've been given orders to clear the vandals from the road, so there will be no obstructions to the thoroughfare.
Thomas, come join the lines, little Polish clicking soldier.
Pfefferberg remains motionless until the last soldier passes, then returns to clearing the street. Mrs. Dresner hurries down a staircase and runs into Adam Levy, an 8-year-old boy wearing a Jewish policeman's uniform. He takes another look and lowers his whistle.
Mrs. Dresner?
Yes. Oh, you're a friend of my son's. Don't worry, I'll go quietly. I'll be no trouble.
No, get under the stairs. They'll be down searching soon. You'll be safe there. Please, hide.
Not by the sun.
Please. Hide under the stairs.
He hides her, then meets four approaching soldiers.
I've searched the building. There's no one here.
They jog away. As Adam returns, Danka Dresner scurries down the steps. Mrs. Dresner spots her and embraces her. They part and look toward the Jewish police boy.
Hello, Adam.
Hello, Danka.
He smiles shyly, then takes her arm.
Come with me. I will put you in the good line.
Do you know the saying now of life is still life? You are not a boy anymore. I'm saying a blessing for you.
The scene changes to Oskar Schindler on his horse atop the grassy bluff. With a taut brow, he gazes down at the frenzied streets. In the middle of the black and white scene, a little 3-year-old girl wearing a red coat wanders down a street through the mayhem. A soldier shoves a woman into the street right behind the little girl and aims his machine gun. The woman falls dead. On the bluff, Schindler's troubled gaze locks on the girl in red as she walks untouched through the turmoil of Nazis and fleeing Jews. An officer escorts the little girl into a passing crowd of men and women. Later, we look down from the bluff. The little girl in red heads up a street alone. She passes soldiers stripping away people's suitcases and flinging them into the street. A soldier in a corner balcony pitches bundles and suitcases over the railing. Schindler guides his horse along the bluff, keeping the little girl in view. We see her marching along in another group, passing Gert as he orders a soldier to line up 7 men front to back. A soldier aims his rifle at the column of men. The first 5 collapse. Gert shoots the remaining 2 in the head. Ingrid turns to Schindler.
Oh, please, let's go. Let's go, please. Come on.
She turns her horse around. Schindler hesitates and steadies his shifting horse. Under his knotted brow, his pained eyes watch the girl in red enter a doorway. She scurries up a flight of stairs. Schindler takes one last look at the ghetto, then turns his horse. He joins Ingrid and trots away. The little girl in red runs into an abandoned apartment and squeezes under a bed. Her wide eyes shine in the darkness as she covers her ears. Nighttime. The dark shapes of a squad of soldiers jog down the street. Moonlight glints off their sharply notched helmets and long leather SS coats. In a building, two SS men wearing stethoscopes listen carefully to the ceiling.
Markieren. Markieren.
One nods to an officer below, then marks a point on the ceiling with chalk. Soldiers with submachine guns line a stairwell. In a small room, a piano lid opens. A young man pokes out his head. In another room, a woman removes a bureau's false front to reveal her son. Another boy climbs out of a washstand. A trapdoor under a bed pops open. Soldiers open a door. Wielding flashlights with bright beams, the three soldiers enter a dark room and look around. One kneels and looks under a single bed, while another looks through cupboards. Together, two of them turn the bed on its side. A man hides sandwiched under the bedboards. Flashlights sweep a wall and find a large family in an open closet. The man on the piano steps out. The soldiers waiting in the stairwell charge up. Shots flash through the halls. The soldiers storm every floor. An SS officer with neatly combed hair plays the hiding place piano. Two officers pause in the doorway to listen.
Was ist das? Ist das Bach? Ist das Bach?
Nein, Mozart.
Mozart?
Ja.
Three soldiers riddle the upturned bed. Feathers fly into the air. An officer plugs his ears and walks outside as soldiers pepper the chalk-marked ceilings and surrounding cupboards. Outside, bodies lie in a heap. Stiff arms stretch into the air. Jewish policemen search their pockets.
Das wollen wir heute noch schaffen?
Nein, das schaffen wir nicht.
Gert's aides, Huyar and Kunda, calmly ponder a map. Gert washes his hands and face.
I wish this fucking night were over.
From the bluff, we look down on the ghetto tenements. Gun bursts flash in window after window. In the enamelware factory, stacks and stacks of metal pots crowd the room. Schindler stands in his second floor office in front of a large window above the factory floor. In a daze, he leans against the window and stares down at the pots. Ingrid sits nearby with her hands over her face, crying. Morning at Gert's villa. Shirtless, Amon Gert steps out of his bedroom onto a balcony and looks down the hillside into the Poishoff labor camp. He inhales on a cigarette. His gut distends out over his pants. In the compound, the prisoners take off their caps and look at the ground. Goldberg and other Jewish policemen call the roll in the men's section. We glimpse Stern and the short, stocky Mr. Nussbaum. The two investors, along with Henry Rosner and Poldek Pfefferberg. Hilovich calls the roll in the women's section. Mila Pfefferberg glances up briefly beside Mrs. Dresner and Danka. Goldberg struts past Mr. Dresner and his son Yannick. The prisoners line a square compound. Guards stand throughout. Female guards wearing black cloaks are posted with the women. Thick wisps of morning mist drift through the ranks. Up on his bedroom balcony, Gert watches and smokes.
The worst is over. We are workers now.
Mansi Rosner and Mrs. Nussbaum hug as they disperse. Gert pinches the cigarette in his lips and picks up a bolt-action rifle with a mounted scope. He aims it at the prison yard and scans the moving lines of men and women. A few carry platforms and wheelbarrows. The scope stops on a woman stooping to tie her shoe. Lowering his rifle, he sets his cigarette on the railing and exhales calmly. He places the rifle butt firmly against his shoulder and aims carefully. The woman stands up. The bullet streaks through her head. Now a nude woman in Gert's bed.
Oh, God. Amen.
She puts a pillow over her head. Gert cranes down and coolly picks up his cigarette with his teeth. The prisoners race through the compound. They duck behind the long wooden barracks. The smooth-faced, bare-chested Gert coolly surveys the camp, then aims his rifle. A woman sitting on some steps collapses and twitches. Workmen digging nearby dig faster. The nude woman in Gert's bed glances out at him, then sinks onto her pillow. Gert looks through his scope and scans the frantically working and running prisoners below. He stands, hooks the rifle across both shoulders, and stretches his bare, paunchy torso, twisting from side to side. Stepping inside, he opens the rifle bolt and flicks an empty shell at the woman in bed.
Amen, you're such a damn fucking child.
Wakey, wakey.
He walks through an open door into a bathroom, where he sets down his rifle and unzips his pants.
Make coffee.
Make us a sub.
Now, outside the camp's main gate, the white sidewall tires of Schindler's limousine roll over a street paved with tombstones. In Gert's villa, SS officers and businessmen meet for lunch around an elegant dining table.
The SS will manage certain industries itself inside Guaschow. A metalworks, brush factory, another for reprocessing Jewish clothing from the ghettos for use by bombed-out families back home. But it's private industry like yours that stands to benefit most by moving inside the way of Commandant Amon.
No. Sit. Julian, how are you? Good to see you, my friend. Oskar Schindler.
Leo Jorn.
Schindler greets Scherner, then two businessmen, Franz Bosch and Julius Modrich.
Franz, good to see you.
Hello, Oskar. Glad you could join us.
My pleasure. Julius.
How are you?
Good.
You lost weight.
Only in the shoulders. Please, everybody, sit down. How are you doing? Oskar Schindler.
Gert shakes his hand.
We started without you.
Fine. I miss anything good?
I was explaining to Herr Bosch and Herr Madrich some of the benefits of moving their factories into Kwashov.
I meant the food.
Since your labor is housed on site, it's available to you at all times. You can work them all night if you want. Your factory policies, whatever they've been in the past, they'll continue to be. They'll be respected.
I have to know, where do you get a suit like that? What is that? Is that silk?
Of course.
Yeah, it has a nice sheen about it.
Thank you.
Very nice.
I'd say I'd get you one, but the man who made it's probably dead. I don't know.
After dinner, Schindler and Gert.
I go to work the other day. Nobody's there. Nobody tells me about this. I have to find out. I have to go in. Everybody's gone.
No. They're not gone. They're here.
They're mine! Every day that goes by, I'm losing money. Every worker that is shot costs me money. I have to find somebody else. I have to train them.
We're going to be making so much money that none of this is going to matter.
It's bad business.
Gert motions with a finger, and the willowy-figured Helen Hirsch meekly enters the room. Wearing a maid's black dress and white apron, she refills Schindler's glass with cognac.
Thank you.
Leave the bottle.
She sets it down and clears a plate.
Lena. Thank you.
Looking at the floor, she nods faintly and leaves. Gert sits up, then leans close.
Shanna told me something else about you.
Yeah? What's that?
That you know the meaning of the word gratitude. That it's not some vague thing with you like it is with others. You want to stay where you are. You've got things going on inside. Things are good. You don't want anybody telling you what to do. I can understand all that, you know. I know you. What you want is your own sub-camp.
He smiles. Schindler leans in and fills Gert's glass.
Do you have any idea what's involved? The paperwork alone, and if you get to go to build a fucking thing, getting a fucking permit, it's enough to drive you crazy. When the engineers show up, they stand around, they argue about drainage, foundations, codes, exact specifications, parallel fences, 4 kilometers long, 1,200 kilograms of barbed wire, 6,000 kilograms of electrified fences, ceramic insulators, 3 cubic meters of airspace per prison. I'm telling you, you want to shoot somebody. I've been through it, you know, I know.
Well, you know, you've been through it. You could make things easier for me. I'd be grateful.
Gert starts to smile. Scores of guarded prisoners, women in front, men in back, filed through the gate of Schindler's factory, Deutsche Emil Warenfabrik. Inside the factory grounds, the men are herded past the women. Schindler, a head taller than everyone, stands to one side and scans the men. His young secretary, Victoria, stands beside him. The last of the men passes. Schindler frowns and throws up his arms.
Where's Stern?
Back at camp. Goldberg and Stern follow Gert into an office.
Goldberg and Mikhailovich, make sure I see my cut from the factory owners in this camp. Leaving you to take care of my main account, the Schindler account. He wants his independence. I gave it to him. But independence costs money. This you understand.
Stern nods and looks at the floor. Gert starts to leave, then turns back.
Look at me.
Stern turns stiffly and drags his gaze up to Gert's slicked hair, thin, blank lips, and starkly pale eyes.
Don't forget who you are working for now.
Goldberg follows him out. Nighttime. At a party in his villa, Gert grabs laughing girls and embraces them with wet, ravenous kisses. One girl sprinkles him with champagne. He clutches a brunette and drags a grinning blonde into his arms. Schindler stands beside him. Schindler backs away and pushes a happy blonde into Gert's embrace. Outside, a giant searchlight sweeps across the villa's lower balcony, full of drunken officers and women. At the camp's open front gate, drunken guards veer off the road paved with tombstones. Stern scratches his head and is escorted out. Posted guards raise a bottle of vodka to Schindler.
Thank you, Herr Direktor.
Prost, Herr Direktor.
Stern is led over to the motor pool where Schindler waits.
What are you doing?
What? Scratching my head.
Makes them think we have lice. Helps make them keep their distance.
Do you have lice?
You have your notebook. The calendar on my desk has the birthdays of our SS friends' wives and children. Don't forget to send something. Record payoffs to the main administration and economics office, the armaments
slowly,
board.
Stand, slowly.
The armaments board, the governor general's division of the interior and chief of police as fees, and make them on the first of each month. As opposed to individual payoffs to our SS contacts, the list is in the lower drawer of my desk, which
first of month.
SS contacts list lower drawer of my desk, which you handle as cash contributions to legitimate charities sent, of course, through each official's office. Dealings with our black market contacts listed as suppliers in the legitimate ledger are more complicated. What do you mean? Forget it. You can't forget it. You can't forget it.
It gives me a headache.
Stern glances nervously back at the gate.
I couldn't get you out of here.
I'll be all right.
Anyway, I'm here almost every week. Wednesdays, usually. I look in on you, see how you're doing.
He holds out a plate of orange slices and hors d'oeuvre.
Yeah. Put these in your pocket. Come on.
Stern takes them.
Herr Director, don't let things fall apart. I work too hard.
He stares squarely at Schindler, then brushes off his hands. Stern plods back toward the gate, down the tombstone road. A searchlight blazes across the barbed wire gate. A sign reads, Arbeitslager Poischoff. Stern scratches his head and walks through. Schindler watches him and starts to smile. Words appear. Metalworks factory inside Poischoff forced labor camp. Gert, Kuyar, and Kunda saunter in.
Work!
The workmen don their caps and get to work. Gert, smoking a cigarette, approaches the rabbi, a short, balding man in his 60s, who hammers small metal parts. The rabbi quickly removes his cap and looks obediently at the floor.
What are you making?
Hinges, sir.
He quickly pulls one out of a box and hands it to Gert.
I've got some workers coming in tomorrow. Where the hell are they from again?
Yugoslavia, Commandant.
I've got to make room.
He takes out a stopwatch.
Make me a hinge.
Yes, sir.
He snaps his cap on, empties his vice, and points. Gert steps out of the way. The rabbi slips past and picks up a square, palm-sized piece of metal. He puts it in a machine and swings a lever, pressing the piece down and curling the end. With two curled pieces, he hurries back to his vise, where he hammers a pin into each curl.
You're doing well.
He pounds one piece onto the other, joining them into a hinge. He swivels it back and forth, takes off his cap, and presents it to Gert.
Oh, that's very good. But I'm a bit confused, and perhaps you can help me. What I don't understand is that you've been working since, I think, what, about 6 this morning. Yet, such a small pile of hinges.
The rabbi closes his eyes and swallows. Gert walks out. Kuyar grabs the rabbi by the neck, follows, and throws him onto the pavement. The rabbi kneels and leans his head forward. Gert pulls out his Luger, cocks it, and aims. Nothing happens. Gert checks the ammo cartridge, then reloads it and cocks again.
Oh, Christ.
Man, try that, sir.
Check the angle lever. Maybe it's bent.
No. You wouldn't hear a clicker. It was the angle lever. It's the pin.
Maybe it's the pin. Maybe the pin shaft is greasy.
What did I just say? Yeah.
He hands it back. Gert aims again.
Herr Kommandant.
Gert pulls out a smaller pistol.
That my heap of hinges was so unsatisfactory because the machines were being recalibrated this morning.
The gun fails.
I was put on to shoveling coal.
Seething, Gert cocks and recocks his gun. Gert pistol whips him and stalks off. The rabbi grabs his head and curls up in a ball. Huyar and Kunda collect the faulty pistols and walk away.
Strange, huh?
The scene changes to Gert's villa. Schindler arrives with a glossy English riding saddle.
Thank you, Muck. Ah, Lyshek.
Don't touch the leather. It's just been oiled. Got him pure.
Oh, for me? Oh, thank you very much, Director. Thank you.
Herr Director! Herr Director!
Stern runs up to the barbed wire fence.
Herr Director!
Later, Stern meets with Schindler.
He was making hinges slowly.
So the man can turn out the hinge in less than a minute. Why the long story?
Schindler lights a cigarette, then puts his hand in his pocket. Stern stares at his pocket. Schindler rolls his eyes, hands over his gold lighter, and leaves. Stern smiles at him. Later, the Jewish policeman, Goldberg, lights a cigarette with the gold lighter and writes the name Levertov on a list. Schindler strolls through his factory and passes Rabbi Levertov.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Levertov smiles.
Nobody knows who stole the chicken.
Tell him about
the chicken. A man walks around with a chicken and nobody notices this.
He holds out a dead chicken.
Tell him about the chicken.
Gert grabs a soldier's rifle and swings it toward the line of prisoners. A man falls dead. A tall soldier shoots him in the head. Smoke and blood pour out.
Still, nobody knows.
He raises the rifle. A boy, Adam Levy, steps forward. He hangs his head and shakes with sobs.
It was you. You committed this crime.
No, sir.
But you know who, though.
Yes.
Who?
Him!
He points to the dead man. Stern follows Schindler to his car.
He's very gifted.
Yeah, sure. Bring him over.
He hands Stern a cigarette case.
Sir. Thank you.
In his office, Goldberg takes a cigarette out of the very same case and writes Adam's name on a list.
Thank you again, Herr Director.
You're welcome again.
It's an honor to work for such a great company.
It's great to have you.
I promise to learn everything there is to know about enamelware production.
That's great.
Later, a plain woman in her 20s gathers her courage and heads into the factory's guard station. The guard picks up a phone.
Hello? Miss Elsa Kravitz here. She wants to speak to the Herr Director.
She paces nervously as the guard waits on the phone. Up a steep flight of stairs, Schindler's broad-shouldered form looks down at the drab young woman. She peers up hopefully. Schindler disappears down a corridor. The guard nods and hangs up the phone.
Yes. He wants you.
She looks down and nods. As she turns to leave, her mouth tightens with determination. The scene changes to the young woman's apartment. She stands in front of a mirror, putting on lipstick. Her hair is curled and pulled back away from her face. Later, wearing a fashionable hat and dress, she stands at the factory's guard station and leans against the railing. Schindler appears at the top of the steps. He shows her into his office.
Please, sit down.
Bernard, Cognac?
No, thank you.
So, what can I do for you?
He sits on the edge of his desk and takes a sip of cognac.
They say that no one dies here. They say your factory is a haven. They say you are good.
His smile flattens.
Who says that?
Everyone.
He walks to a window and stares down at the busy factory floor.
My name is Regina Perlmann, not Elsa Krause. I've been living in Krakow on false papers since the ghetto massacre. My parents are in Błaszów. Their names are Hanna and Jakob Perlmann. They are older people. They are killing older people now in Błaszów. They bury them up in the forest. Look. I don't have any money. I borrowed these clothes. I'm begging you. Please. Please bring them here.
I don't do that. You've been misled. I ask one thing, whether or not a worker has certain skills. That's what I ask, and that's what I care about.
My father is an importer, not a metal worker.
Such activities are illegal.
To get forced papers.
You will not entrap me, Miss Strasser. Cry, and I will have you arrested. I swear to God.
She drops a piece of paper and scrambles out. Later, Schindler storms into Stern's camp office.
People die. It's a fact of life. He wants to kill everybody? Great. What am I supposed to do about it? Bring everybody over? Is that what you think? Send them over to Schindler. Send them all. His place is a haven, didn't you know? It's not a factory. It's not an enterprise of any kind. It's a haven for rabbis and orphans and people with no skills whatsoever.
You think I don't know what you're doing? You're so quiet all the time.
I know.
Are you losing money?
No, I'm not losing money. That's not the point.
What other point
is? It's dangerous. It's dangerous to me.
You have to understand, Gert is under enormous pressure. You have to think of it in his situation. He's got this whole place to run. He's responsible for everything that goes on here. All these people. He's got a lot of things to worry about. And he's got the war, which brings out the worst in people. Never the good, always the bad. Always the bad. But in normal circumstances, he wouldn't be like this. He'd be all right. They'd just be the good aspects of him, which... he's a wonderful crook. A man who loves good food, good wine, the ladies, making money.
Killing.
He can't enjoy it.
Bajewski told me the other day somebody escaped from a work detail outside the wire. Gert lined up everybody from the missing command's barracks. He shot the man to the left of Bajewski, the man to the right of him. He walked down the line shooting every other man with a pistol.
In a flashback, Gert's face is spattered with blood.
25.
Gert stalks away, leaving a handful of survivors.
What do you want me to do about it?
Nothing. Let's just talk.
Stern smiles amiably, then returns to his paperwork. Looking away, Schindler rummages through his pocket, pulls out a piece of paper, and squints at the writing.
Perlman.
Perlman!
Husband and wife.
Jakob and Hannah Perlman!
Goldberg calls out the names. A woman in her 50s steps forward, then a thin man with a grizzled face. Back in Stern's office, Schindler removes his watch and hands it to Stern.
Have Goldberg bring them over.
In the camp compound, Goldberg wears the watch and leads Jakob and Hannah Perelman away. Later, a guard on a bicycle escorts the Perelmans to the enamelware factory. Hannah glances up at her husband and smiles as they walk up to the gate. Across the street, their daughter watches as a guard checks their papers and lets them in. With glistening eyes, their daughter, Regina, takes a deep breath and walks away. She glances up at the factory and smiles. Nighttime. A party at Gert's villa spills out onto the lower balcony. In the cellar, Helen Hirsch and a teenage boy rummage around. Helen finds a scrub brush.
I'm sure this would be better than those rags, Alicia.
Schindler walks down.
Herr Director, I was just helping Alicia to find something to clean the stains from the Herr Commandant's bathtub.
Pardon me, Herr Director.
Lisiak bows and leaves.
Don't have to report to me, Helen. You know who I am?
He gently takes a bottle of wine from her, looks at the label, and hands her a different one.
I'm Schindler.
Of course, I have heard, and you have been here before.
He holds out a bar of chocolate.
Yeah,
Why don't you keep this someplace? Go on, take it.
I get extra food here.
Well, if you don't want to eat it, trade it. I'll give it to Lisek. Why not build yourself up?
Later, she sits in a chair in the brick-walled cellar.
My first day here, he beat me because I threw out the bones from dinner. He came down to the basement at midnight and he asked me where they were. For his dogs, you understand. I said to him, I don't know how I say this. I never could say it now. I said to him, why are you beating me? He said, the reason I beat you now is because you ask why I beat you.
I know your sufferings, Helen.
It doesn't matter. I have accepted them.
Accepted them?
One day, he will shoot me.
No. He won't shoot you.
I know. I see things. We were on the roof on Monday, young Lisiak and I, and we saw the Herr Kommandant come out of the front door and down the steps by the patio, right there below us, and there on the steps, he drew his gun and he shot a woman who was passing by. A woman carrying a bundle through the throat. Just a woman on her way somewhere. You know, she was no fatter or thinner or slower or faster than anyone else, and I couldn't guess what had she done. The more you see of the Herr Kommandant, the more you see there is no set rules that you can live by. You can say to yourself, if I follow these rules, I will be safe.
He won't shoot you because he enjoys you too much. He enjoys you so much he won't even let you wear the star. He doesn't want anyone else to know it's a Jew he's enjoying. He shot the woman from the steps because she meant nothing to him. She was one of a series, neither offending or pleasing him. But you, Helen.
He leans forward and puckers his lips.
It's all right. It's not that kind of a kiss.
He kisses her forehead. She squeezes her eyes shut.
Thank you.
He gives her his handkerchief.
Yeah. Right, the wine.
After the party, Schindler and Gert stand on the lower balcony. Helen refills Schindler's cognac and Gert's hard liquor.
A wonderful party.
He sits down. Gert falls over.
Why do you drink that motor oil? I send you good stuff all the time. Your liver's going to explode like a hand grenade.
You know, I look at you. What's you?
He pulls himself into a seat.
You're never drunk. Oh, that's real control. Control is power. That's power.
Schindler eyes him carefully.
Is that why they fear us?
We have the fucking power to kill, that's why they fear us.
They fear us because we have the power to kill arbitrarily. A man commits a crime, he should know better. We have him killed and we feel pretty good about it. Or we kill him ourselves and we feel even better.
It's not power, though. That's justice. It's different than power. Power is when we have every justification to kill. And we don't.
You think that's power?
That's what the Emperor said. A man stole something, he's brought in before the Emperor, he throws himself down on the ground, he begs for mercy. He knows he's going to die. And the Emperor pardons him. This worthless man, he lets him go.
I think you are drunk.
That's power, Amon. That is power.
He stares at Gert, inches away. Gert gazes back in rapt attention.
Amon, the good.
Gert smiles.
I pardon you.
He gulps his drink. Daytime. Stern finds SS officers looking through his books, then reports it to Gert.
What do they want?
I don't know, but they're in my office right now reviewing our books.
That's my accountant. Tell me, should I be alarmed that the auditors are reviewing my books?
Well,
or have you done your job properly?
You needn't be alarmed.
You needn't be alarmed.
He finds his saddle on the stable floor and shoves the stable boy.
I'm sorry, sir.
Do you know how much this saddle is worth? Do you know how much it costs?
The boy stares at the floor, breathing hard.
All right.
He shoves the saddle into the boy's arms.
Stern, what the hell are you doing following me around?
Stern walks away. He looks back at Gert, then breaks into a trot. Later, Gert rides his white horse into camp at an easy walk. Inside a barracks, Mr. Dresner whistles through a window to his wife and daughter across a barbed wire fence. They return the greeting. They all smile. Then Mrs. Dresner and Danka suddenly stand and look at the ground. The women around them do the same as Gert rides slowly past. Near the makeshift kindergarten playground, a young guard drags a teenage girl by her hair, then snaps to attention as Gert arrives.
She was smoking on the job.
Tell her not to do it again.
He rides away. The guard kicks the girl as she flees, then frowns with confusion. In the villa, Lisiek scrubs a bathtub. Gert barges in. Lisiek stands and removes his cap.
I have to report, sir. I've been unable to remove the stains from your bathtub.
Gert looks in the tub.
What are you using, Lisiek?
Soap, Commandant.
Gert feels the stain.
Soap? Not lye?
Gert's sharp glare breaks for a distracted moment. Then he stares ponderously at Lisiek.
Go ahead, go on, leave, I pardon you.
He holds up two fingers and tentatively touches Lisiek's shoulder. Gert catches his own reflection in the mirror as the boy leaves. Lisiek trots down the long staircase from the villa to the camp. In the bathroom, Gert brushes back a stray strand of hair. With an imperious gaze, he extends two fingers.
I pardon you.
His fingertips touch the mirror. Lisiek crosses the ground toward the gate. Gert self-consciously curls in his fingers, then gazes at one of his nails. He glances around the room, then his eyes harden at the sight of the stained bathtub. A bullet explodes in the dirt at Lisiek's feet. He freezes, glances up at the villa, then keeps walking. Further back, Stern flinches, then walks toward the gate, past Lisiek's sprawled and bleeding body. The gate opens. A guard trots two prisoners out toward the body. Stern walks inside. Now, young, smooth hands run a nail brush over long, slender fingertips. Our view drifts up the well-manicured hand, up a smooth, white silk shirt to Gert's face. His eyes are locked on Helen Hirsch as she keeps her attention focused on his manicure. Gert sits at his dining room table. His attack dogs, a huge speckled Great Dane and a German Shepherd, lie nearby. Gert sits up in his chair, his suspenders bow around his bulging gut. He leans forward and turns the page of a magazine. His cheek brushes close to a few curling strands of hair hanging off Helen's forehead. He glances down at her and turns another page. Helen keeps buffing. Her eyes dart up nervously. He sits back and stares at her. Now in a woman's barracks, a Jewish couple, Yosef and Rebecca, stand underneath a wedding canopy.
Although I am not a rabbi, in these circumstances, I pray to the Almighty that He will forgive me if I intone the blessings. Baruch atah Hashem Eloheinu melech ha'olam asher tzivuni al ha'arayos ve'usor lanu et ha'arusos ve'hisir luni et ha'nesuos luni al yedei chippe ve'kidishin.
On the balcony, Gert listens to a radio, pours himself a drink of hard liquor, then stares ponderously at the floor. His eyes drift upward, growing cold and bright. In a nightclub, Schindler sits at the front table with Oberfuhrer Scherner. Gert enters the cellar. Helen, frail and rigid, stands by a wash basin. Her wet slip clings to her breasts.
So?
He paces in front of her.
This is where you come to hide from me. Came to tell you that you really are a wonderful cook and a well-trained servant. I mean it. If you need a reference after the war, I'd be happy to give you one. It must get lonely down here, and you're listening to everyone upstairs having such a good time.
She stares blankly, straight ahead. Her chest heaves with every breath as he approaches.
Does it? You can answer.
She looks down.
But what's the right answer? That's what you're thinking. What does he want to hear?
He circles her.
The truth, Helen, is always the right answer.
She doesn't move.
Yes, you're right. Sometimes we're both lonely. Yes. I mean...
He paces, then presses forward and comes within inches of her stoic face. He veers away and smiles uneasily.
I would like so much to reach out and touch you in your loneliness. What would that be like, I wonder? I mean, what would be wrong with that? And I realize that you're not a person in the strictest sense of the word, but... I mean, well, maybe you're right about that, too. You know, maybe what's wrong isn't... It's not us. It's, you know, it's this.
He gestures vaguely around.
I mean, when they compare you to vermin, to rodents, to lice, I just...
He steps close behind her.
No, you make a good point. You make a very good point.
Facing her, he steals a glance at her firm breasts, then softly brushes her curly hair away from her cheek.
Is this the face of a rat? Are these the eyes of a rat? Hath not a Jew eyes?
She trembles as he lowers his left hand, then runs his right over her wet hair. The club singer serenades Schindler. Gert's hand drifts down Helen's shoulder.
I feel for you, Helen.
He cups her breast. The beautiful club singer takes Schindler's face in her hands and sits on his lap. Gert's lips draw close to Helen's. The club singer kisses Schindler. Gert stops inches from Helen's mouth.
No, I don't think so. You're a Jewish bitch. You nearly talked me into it, didn't you?
At the wedding, the young groom stomps on a cloth-wrapped light bulb. Gert slaps Helen. Blood trickles from her mouth. Schindler applauds warmly and blows kisses. The young bride and groom kiss, then embrace their friends. Gert throws Helen onto her cot, then tips a shelf on top of her. Daytime in Schindler's office. Stern and SS officers watch Schindler tenderly kiss girl after girl. Gert raises his glass. They cheer as Schindler blows out candles on a birthday cake. Two Jewish girls in tattered dresses walk in with a small, crumbly cake.
On behalf of the workers, sir, I wish for you a happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Well, Stern, please. Thank you very much. What a lovely cake.
He crouches, grins at the small girl, and kisses both of her cheeks. He rises and plants a long kiss on the pretty teenage girl's lips. Her eyes bulge fearfully, and she stiffens. Gert stares. The guests shift uncomfortably.
Thank you very much. Tell them thank you from me.
She hurries out with the other girl. Henry and Leo Rosner, playing violin and accordion, quickly resume. Nighttime in a women's barracks.
The trains arrived and the people were driven out with clubs. They were lined up in front of two big warehouses. One was marked cloakroom and the other valuables, and there they were made to undress. A Jewish boy handed them pieces of string to tie their shoes together. They shaved their hair. They told them it was needed to make something special for U-boat crews. And then they were headed down a big corridor to bunkers with Stars of David on the doors and signs that said bath and inhalation room. The SS gave them soap. They told them to breathe all the time because it's good for disinfecting. And then they gassed them.
Tamila, why soaps?
So that they would agree to go in, I think.
Come on, Mila, stop it. Your bedtime stories are scaring everyone.
Yeah. You know, it's ridiculous.
I don't believe it either.
I cannot believe it.
Heard
I didn't say I believed it. I said I heard it.
From whom?
From somebody who heard it from someone who was there. You know, if they were there, they would have been gassed. Yes.
It doesn't make any sense.
We're their workforce.
What sense does it make to kill your own workforce? To go to all this trouble of assembling a workforce only to...
No, it can't be true. We are very, very important for them.
Rebecca, the young bride, rubs her brow fretfully.
Good night.
Good night, sweet dreams.
Outside the camp, boxcars couple together. Mrs. Dresner runs to the window.
We have to go to the appell plants. The list makers are here. There is going to be a selection.
Monsi Rosner wakes up. Her eyes widen with dread. Jewish policemen set up a row of folding tables across the compound. Goldberg sets clipboards with lists onto each table. SS doctors in white gowns cross the compound and meet a group of camp officers. The Jewish policemen line up, shoulder to shoulder, and count off.
Stop!
On the villa's bedroom balcony, an SS doctor listens to Gert's heart. A woman in a negligee joins them.
You could afford to lose some weight, Amon. And you've got to cut down on the cognac.
Moni, what's going on?
It's another semi-annual physical.
She points down to the camp.
There.
Oh, I've got another shipment coming in. What are they this time?
Hungarians.
Yeah, Hungarians. They've got to separate the sick from the healthy. Have to make room.
In the compound, an officer turns on a gramophone and places a loudspeaker microphone beside it. The men and women line up on opposite sides of the compound. Clutching their bundled clothing in front of their naked bodies, they're forced to jog past the seated doctors, who select people to be pulled from the line. In a barracks, women scurry outside. Some of them linger. Mansi pricks her finger with a pin and rubs blood into her cheeks. Mila and Mrs. Dresner do the same, working blood into their cheeks and lips. Rebecca nervously smears too much blood on her face. Mila helps her rub it in.
Look alive, Rebecca.
Groups of naked women and men jog around the compound in a circle and pass the doctor's tables for evaluation. One group is led through a mud puddle, past two officers engaged in amiable conversation. The officers casually brush spattered mud off their uniforms. Gert walks through the compound.
That's my mechanic. Whose bright idea was it to get rid of him?
Clothed men are led away. Gert summons Pfefferberg out of the group and sends him to join the healthy men. Doctors point to swiftly passing women, naked except for scarves covering their hair. Guards separate the selected ones. An old man raises his arms. A doctor inspects his back and bony rib cage. Another doctor has an older woman open her toothless mouth. A third turns a tall, gaunt man in circles. A fourth watches an elderly man with a sunken chest do deep knee bends. A guard pulls a flabby woman out of the passing line. The prisoners, determined unhealthy, jog toward a corner of the compound to put on their clothes. On the way, Jewish policemen with truncheons swat their backs and legs. Gert watches a guard select an average, middle-aged woman from the circling prisoners.
No. Wait, go away. She can work. Come here. Look. Separate the sick from the healthy. Those who can work and those who can't. She can work. You can work. You can come.
Kunda grabs her arm and shoves her back into the circling ranks. An officer changes the record on the gramophone. Across the camp, female SS guards lead all the children around a corner. Unaware, the children board four supply trucks. As Jews wearing striped prison outfits hoist up each child, three children bolt toward the barracks. Two SS officers chase them down and return them to the line. Little Oleg Rosner inches forward in one of the lines as boys and girls climb into the open-air beds of the trucks. Oleg, wearing a floppy tweed cap, glances cautiously around. Oleg slips away and dashes around the corner of a building. In the main compound, a group of women gets dressed.
Those not selected for transport, put your clothes back on.
Go back to the barracks.
And return to the barracks.
Mrs. Dresner slips on her dress. Mila, Mrs. Nussbaum, and Monsi grin with relief and help one another.
Go back to the barracks!
Mrs. Dresner looks over her shoulder. Her eyes flash wide.
Oh, my God!
The trucks carrying the children roll through the camp. The children wave happily. The women tear across the compound toward the trucks. Officers hold out their arms in vain and point their pistols skyward. Monsi runs beside a truck and frantically scans the children. Her husband, Henry, and his brother, Leo, catch up and race behind the departing truck. The convoy gathers speed and leaves them all behind. Mrs. Dresner stands at the roadside, anxiously scanning the crowded trucks of waving children. Monsi turns desperately to Mrs. Dresner.
You didn't see him?
They're hiding. I'm telling you, they're hiding in Danka.
Zurück in die
Barracks!
In a barracks, Oleg lifts up a trapdoor in the floor. Three boys hide inside. He drops it closed. He opens the door to a nearby brick furnace. A grungy boy inside closes it on him. He runs to the back and pulls up a floorboard. Three children peer up.
There is no room for you in here. Go away, quick.
Oleg runs into an adjacent deserted washhouse. He drops his cap into one of the pit latrines, climbs up on the stoop, then carefully lowers himself into the hole. He drops into a thick swill up to his chest. Five slop-covered children stare at him, Danka and Janek among them. Oleg looks up and trembles. At the camp's train depot, guards hustle the unfit Jews into cattle cars. Many of the Jews wear vertically striped prison outfits. Schindler, wearing a linen suit, joins Gert and the officers at a picnic table on the platform.
Oskar!
Come on, gentlemen. Why didn't you call me?
I tried to call you, Yeah,
quite a picnic, huh?
I'm arriving a little late, you know. It's taking longer than I thought. Yeah, a drink?
Oh, something called Bola.
He sits beside Gert.
Oh, another beautiful day.
Schindler takes off his white fedora, fans himself, and looks around. A female SS guard beats the side of a boxcar with her whip. Each boxcar has two small windows on a side. Outstretched arms jam through their barbed wire screens. A woman dangles out a diamond bracelet. A guard plugs his ears. Inside the cars, mouths gape open.
What's that?
Schindler accepts a glass of iced tea, glances at a water spigot, then tilts his face to the blazing sun.
You say we get your fire hoses out here and hose down the cars. Thank you.
He takes a sip, then grins at Gert.
Indulge me.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
I'll bring the fire hoses.
Where's the fire?
Later, Schindler guides two prisoners as they aim a fire hose at the boxcar windows. The fine spray soaks the grateful prisoners inside. They briefly shower at the next window. Schindler redirects the hose into the last window. Inside, men and women stretch open their mouths.
This is really cruel, Oscar. You're giving them hope. You shouldn't do that. That's cruel!
Come on, try and reach the far end.
With many boxcars beyond reach, Schindler tugs urgently on the taut hose, then approaches the table of SS officers.
I've got some 200-meter hoses back in the mall.
I have 20 meters at home in my garden.
We can reach the cars at the end. What?
Yeah,
throw up.
Later, a long extended fire hose snakes to the end of the train. Schindler guides the two men with the hose. Inside the last boxcar, water runs through the roof. A young man laps at the drops. The officers at the picnic table grin. Behind them, Itzhak Stern watches grimly.
On the roof, on the other side.
Schindler directs the fire hose back down the line, then presents a gift basket of food and wine to a young officer.
Scharfführer, every time the train stops, you open the doors, you give them water, yeah?
Jawohl.
Yeah. This car! This car!
Water showers the waving arms in a boxcar window. Gert's jeering smile flattens. Later, outside the enamelware factory, a long black coupe pulls up. Two men in long black leather coats climb out, enter the factory, and push workers aside. They meet with Schindler in his office.
I'm not saying you'll regret it, but you might. You should be aware of that.
We will have to risk regret.
All right, sure. It's a nice day. I'll go for a drive with you.
His secretary, Victoria, hurries to her desk and picks up a phone. A few other secretaries gather round her. The scene changes to a prison. A guard opens a barred door. He and the two leather-clad Gestapo agents escort Schindler to a heavy cell door. The guard releases two bolts and unlocks the door. Schindler steps inside. In the cell, a scruffy German officer sits on a cot.
What about you?
I violated the Raisin Resettlement Act. Though I doubt anyone can point out the actual provision to me. I kissed a Jewish girl.
Did your brick fall off?
Schindler grins. The man topples backward. Schindler's smile fades. Now, Eamon Gert before a colonel of security.
He likes women. He likes good-looking women. He sees a beautiful woman he doesn't think.
The colonel stares flatly.
He has so many women. They love him. Yeah, they love him. I mean, he's married, yeah, but he's... All right, no. She was Jewish. She shouldn't have done it, but... You didn't see this girl. I saw this girl, and this girl was... Oh, she was very good-looking.
The colonel stares, unmoved.
They cast a spell on you, you know, the Jews. When you work closely with them, like I do, you see this. They have this power. It's like a virus. Some of my men are infected with this virus. They should be pitied, not punished. They should receive treatment, because this is as real as typhus. I see this all the time. It's a matter of money.
You're offering me a bribe?
A bribe? No. No, please. It's a gratuity.
Editor!
Oberfuhrer Scherner enters.
Oh.
Gert holds out his hand. Schoner walks past it.
Sit down.
Later, Schindler sits in Schoner's office.
We give you Jewish girls at 5 marks a day, Oscar. You should kiss us, not them. God forbid you ever get a real taste for Jewish skirt. There's no future in it. They don't have a future. That's not just good old-fashioned Jew-hating talk. It's policy now.
He sips his tea. Outside, thin gray clouds veil the sun. In a park, a German officer plays catch with children. They hold out their hands as snow falls from the sky. Victoria walks a dog along the sidewalk and looks up curiously at the falling flakes. Schindler steps into the street, spreads his large hands, and glances skyward. Rubbing his fingers together, he brushes some collected flakes off a car's bumper into his palm. Gray, sooty flakes of ash. Now black smoke on a hillside. Words appear. Huyova Gurka, April 1944. Department D orders Gert to exhume and incinerate the bodies of more than 10,000 Jews killed at Płaszów and the Krakow Ghetto Massacre.
Also los, Bewegung!
Guards hold gloves over their noses as prisoners dig stiff, decomposed bodies out of shallow, muddy graves. Jewish men and women wearing striped prison uniforms dig open a long pit packed with dozens of decaying bodies. Kunda leaps across the pit and shoves a woman loading skulls onto a cart. She slips and falls onto a muddy corpse. A tall conveyor belt dumps the corpses onto an enormous flaming mound of bodies two stories high. Nearby, Huyar turns to a group of fellow officers. His face contorts into a fierce grin. Then he fires his pistol at the burning bodies. Gert joins Schindler as he gets out of his car.
Can you believe this? As if I don't have enough to do, they come up with this. I have to find every rag buried up here and burn it. The party's over, Oscar. They're closing us down, sending everybody to Auschwitz.
What?
I don't know. As soon as I can arrange the shipments, maybe 30, 40 days, that would be fun.
Mila and Poldek push a cart loaded with bone-ragged bodies. The unearthed figure of the little girl in red lies on top. Schindler spots her, lowers the handkerchief from his mouth, and gapes, stricken. Later, in Stern's small, dark office.
I've been talking to Gert.
I know the destination. These are the evacuation orders. I'm to help organize the shipments, put myself on the last train.
That's not what I was going to say. I made Gert promise me he'll put in a good word for you. Nothing bad's going to happen to you there. You'll receive special treatment.
The directives coming in from Berlin mention special treatment more and more often. I'd like to think that's not what you mean.
Preferential treatment, all right? Do I have to invent a whole new language?
I think so. You're staying, I take it.
Schindler gulps his drink.
And Krakow, what on earth for?
What for? You have a business to run. Of course, you'll have to hire new workers. Poles, I guess, they cost a little more, but... What are you going to do?
Stern props up a smile.
You ran my business. No, I'm going home. I've done what I came here for. I've got more money than any man can spend in a lifetime.
He lights a cigarette, exhales deeply, then glances away from Stern's glistening eyes.
Some day, this is all going to end, you know. I was going to say we'll have a drink then.
I think I better have it now.
A tear runs down Stern's cheek. He holds out his hand and swallows tightly. Schindler fills a tumbler and hands it to him. Holding up their glasses, they share a long look, then drink. The scene changes to a bedroom. A beautiful young woman with bare breasts lies asleep in bed. An empty champagne flute sits on her bedside table. Schindler stands in a corner, leaning against the wall. Wearing a robe, he stares pensively out a window, then paces across the dark room. He looks down at an empty suitcase. He stares out another window. Shadows from the lace curtain bend across his troubled face. Morning. In his apartment, Schindler fills a briefcase with stacks of Reichsmark banknotes. Three open steamer trunks are filled with more money. He snaps them closed. Later, at the villa.
I don't understand. You want these people?
These people. My people. I want my people.
Who are you, Moses? Come on, what is this? Oh, where's the money on this? Where's the scam?
It's good business.
Yeah, it's good business in your opinion. Look, you've got to move them. The equipment. Everything to Czechoslovakia. Pay for all that and build another camp. Doesn't make any sense.
Look.
Look, you're not telling me
something. It's good for me. I know them. I'm familiar with them. I don't have to train them. It's good for you. I'll compensate you.
Yeah, that's right.
It's good for the army.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I'm going to make?
What?
Artillery shells.
Everyone's making artillery
tank
shells.
Tank shells. They need that. Shells. Everybody's happy.
Everyone's happy, except me. I mean, you're probably scamming me somehow. If I'm making 100, you've got to be making 3. Hmm? And if you admit to making 3, then it's 4, actually. But how?
I just told you.
No, you did, but you didn't. Yeah, all right. Don't tell me. I'll go along with it. It's just irritating. I can't work it out. Look.
All you have to do is tell me what it's worth to you. What's a person worth
to you? No. What's one worth to you?
Later, in Stern's small office, Schindler paces. Stern types the names, Dresner and Rosner.
Oldeck, Pfefferberg, Miller, Pfefferberg, and Steger, Powell. Steger.
Doctor.
The investors. I want all of them.
Yes, sir.
Fischer, Ishmael Fischer.
The typewriter keys jam.
Toshev, Scharf.
Moment, sir. I'm sorry, sir.
Come on, Stan. Scharf. The children. All the children.
Schindler smokes a cigarette down to a nub.
Other steel. Thank you.
How many?
400. 450.
In a flash forward, we see Schindler arrive at Gert's villa with a leather briefcase. Back in Stern's office, Schindler paces behind Stern. In Gert's office, Gert opens the briefcase and gropes the stacks of German Reichsmarks. Back in Stern's office.
Wolfram.
Jakob.
The typewriter keys punch out the name Feigenbaum.
Feigenbaum Ludwig Jakob Necker. Yes? Necker.
Necker, that's right. And Wolf. How many?
Stern thumbs through the pages.
600.
More.
Now Modric's textile factory.
Do the same thing I'm doing. You might even make money at it.
I don't know.
Come on, Julius. I know about the extra food and clothes you give them paid for out of your own pocket. If we make a combined approach, we could get more than 4,000 out, mine and yours.
Oscar.
We could relocate them in something like safety in Moravia.
I don't know.
Stern's office.
How many cigarettes have you smoked tonight?
Too many.
For everyone you smoke, I smoke half.
With Modric.
I've done all I can.
I will not accept that.
No, Oscar, I can't do
anything. I will not accept that.
No.
Stern's typewriter registers the names Bau and Nova. Schindler peers over Stern's shoulder.
How many?
850, give or take.
Give or take what, Stern? Give or take what? Count them. How many?
He goes through the pages. Nighttime. Schindler sits beside Stern's desk, examining the list.
I didn't. You can finish that page.
Stern takes off his glasses and rubs his eyes.
What did Gert say about this? You just told him how many people you needed and you're not buying them.
Schindler stares flatly.
You're buying them, you're paying him for each of these names.
If you were still working for me, I'd expect you to talk me out of it. It's costing me a fortune. Finish the page and leave one space at the bottom.
Schindler sets down the list, sits back down, and rubs his brow. With both hands, Stern delicately pulls the last page from his typewriter, then gathers all the pages together.
You.
He turns the pages of names to face Schindler.
The list is an absolute good. The list is life. All around its margins lies the gulf.
Oscar, there's a clerical error here at the bottom of the last page.
No, there's one more name I want to put there. I'll never find a maid as well trained as her at Brinnett. They're all country girls.
No.
Schindler takes a sip of cognac. He pulls out a deck of cards and riffles them between his hands.
No.
One hand of 21.
No.
If you win, I'll pay you 7,400 right marks.
No.
Hit a natural, I'll make it 14,800.
No.
If I win, the girl goes on my list.
I can't wedge your head in a card game.
Why not?
Wouldn't be right.
She's just going to Auschwitz number two anyway. What difference does it
She's
make?
She's not got Auschwitz. I'd never do that to her. No, I want her to come back to Vienna with me. I want her to come and work for me there. I want to grow old with her.
Are you mad? Come on. You can't take her to Vienna with you.
No, of course I can't. It's what I'd like to do. What I can do if I'm any sort of a man is the next most merciful thing. I should take her into the woods and shoot her painlessly in the back of the head.
Gert stares out a window, then looks up as Schindler pockets the cards.
What was it you said for him? A natural 21, was it? 14,800.
Schindlerjuden, to this tables. Say your names clearly.
We are the family Dresner.
A clerk at a table checks his list.
We are Rosners. Henry, Mansi,
and Leo.
And our son.
I am Oleg.
Maria Michel.
Chaim Novak.
The history teacher.
Volkan, Markus.
The jeweler.
Michael Lampel.
Yitzhak Sterr.
Rebecca and Joseph Bau.
Rosalia Nussbaum.
Bella Nussbaum.
Yaakov Levertov.
The rabbi.
Faber Rosa.
Faber Andrzej.
Sana.
Frech official.
One of the investors.
Mietek Pember.
Oldek and Mila Pfefferberg.
Horowitz. Dolek.
Adam Levy.
Marcel Goldberg.
Klipstein Isaac Devi.
Altman Edward.
Grimberg Miriam.
Luftig Elias.
Hillman Edward.
Erna Rothberg.
Zuckerman Jotti.
Helen
Hirsch.
Helen, the maid.
Where's the server?
They walk toward two waiting trains.
A woman to this transport. Keep careful. Man to this transport. A woman to this transport.
A guard pushes two women past the checkpoint tables. They join hundreds boarding the steaming trains. Yitzhak Stern stands on a rung and helps other men into a boxcar. Later, a train crosses a snowy field. Inside a dark boxcar, the crowded men pass a tin cup to Stern, who stands by a small barbed wire window. Oleg Rosner reaches out, breaks off an icicle, then hands it to Stern.
Wonderful, Oleg.
He breaks it into the cup.
You know how we make ice and water?
Boys help him blow on it.
Come on. Oleg, get another one.
Oleg breaks off another. Later at a depot, a commandant and his troops await the arriving train. Words appear. Zvito Brindic, Czechoslovakia. Oskar Schindler's hometown. In one of the boxcars, the old investor and Rabbi Levertov stare outside. Stern scans the platform as they roll past SS guards. Schindler stands on the platform and smiles at Stern. As the men jump down and line up, the commandant strides over to Schindler.
You'll be pleased with the level of efficiency I get from these workers. Putzin, under my command, was the envy of every other commandant in the labor camp system. The prisoners, however...
Excuse me.
They would have rather been somewhere else.
He brushes past the commandant. Guards at 10-foot intervals stand between the train station and the Jewish workmen. Schindler climbs some steps to a wooden platform and nudges a guard to step down.
The train with the women has already left Płaszów and will be arriving here very shortly. I know you've had a long journey, but it's only a short walk further to the factory where hot soup and bread is waiting for you. Welcome to Brinlitz.
He throws his arms wide. In the snowy countryside, the women's train cuts across gently rolling farmland.
Beers in tune. Beans are the best part.
And I'm flying beans.
Beans and meat and potatoes and bread. That's not the way you make tune.
They pass children sledding on a hill.
Have you tune?
Yes.
Mila stares out the window. A little boy sneers at her and slashes his finger across his throat.
What do you like?
I like caviar.
Fire.
Mila blanches, then draws her coat and scarf tight. Nighttime. Mila, Helen, and Mrs. Dresner stare keenly out the window. The train slows and enters an enclosed prison compound. A word appears. Auschwitz. At intervals, prisoners stand near the tracks, beside makeshift ramps, wooden planks with one end resting on a sawhorse. Inside a boxcar, a searchlight pierces the slat walls and catches the women's misty breaths. Some stare with dull, hollow eyes. Monsi Rosner peers fearfully through the slats. Helen Hirsch looks at the floor. The wheels of the train slow. Smoke drifts out of the engine's chimney through a light snowfall. The train stops. A boxcar door opens. Two prisoners move a ramp forward, then help the women climb down. A female guard and a male guard with a machine gun watch over them. More guards patrol the other emptying boxcars. The searchlight in the main tower of the camp sweeps through a soft flurry of drifting snowflakes. Beside a ramp, a guard dog flashes his teeth. A caped female guard organizes a group of women into a shoulder-to-shoulder row. The women stare at the ground.
30, 35, 40.
The women breathe in and out rapidly. One woman's lips tremble. Two others stare wildly around the camp. Beside another boxcar, women huddle together. Mrs. Dresner clutches Danka close.
Where are the list makers?
Where are the tapes?
Mila trots down the ramp and stops. She stares up at a tall, square chimney spewing thick smoke into the snowy night sky. The guards organize the women into ranks and herd them into the compound at a trot. Mila and the others are led away. Danka turns to her mother.
Mama, where are we?
Morning. Schindler storms out of his new office.
They're in Auschwitz. The train was never routed here. A paperwork mistake.
His limousine speeds out of the camp. At Auschwitz, the women's hair is clipped hurriedly off. They wince and stare at the floor.
No, 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 no.
Their hair cropped, the women deposit their shoes in a basket and are herded past female guards into a corner of the room. They strip off threadbare dresses, revealing their lean, naked bodies.
Staniecie myć i ręcznik, pójdziecie pod prysznic do dezynfekcji. Szybko się rozbierać.
A female prisoner hauls away their clothes. Mrs. Dresner stands motionless. Donka stands in her mother's arms, leaning against her bare chest and staring blankly. Two steel doors open, labeled Bad und Desinfektion. The women are herded inside. They close their arms in front of their bodies, grip each other desperately, and look wildly around. Bumping and clutching one another, they enter a long, windowless shower room and cower together in small groups. The SS guards close the doors. Through a small peephole, we see the naked women jostling each other fretfully. The lights in the shower chamber snap off. A small light turns on. Mrs. Dresner shakes with terror. Donka sobs. Mrs. Dresner hugs a nearby woman. Another woman bites her fingers and sobs. Others mill around in the dim light, while still others cluster in tight groups and stare with terror at the shower heads hanging from the ceiling throughout the room. A few shower heads on the far wall suddenly turn on. Water bursts from more showers. Mrs. Dresner breaks into a jolted grin as water hits her face. Open, disbelieving smiles spread across the women's faces as all the shower heads spray them with water. One woman holds her hushed face under the spray. Others reach up their hands. Another starts to cry. Mrs. Dresner laughs. A young woman cries into her hands, then reaches overhead and feels the pouring water. Wearing coats and scarves wrapped around their shorn hair, the women are led through the compound. Helen and Mila look back over their shoulders. On the other side of a barbed wire fence, women, children, and men walk in a steady line. An ushering guard smiles at a little girl and pats her on the back. She grins and, along with the others, walks calmly down a steep cellar staircase. The tall, smoking chimney rises from the building above them. Across the compound, Mila stares back at the spewing smoke and falling snow. Daytime. The women line up as an SS doctor surveys them.
How old are you, mother?
An old woman whispers to Mrs. Dresner.
They say to fall against the fence is a kindness.
Don't kill yourself against the fence, Clara. If you do, you'll never know what happened to you.
How old are you, mother?
66, sir.
Sir?
Good morning.
A mistake has been made. We are not supposed to be here. We work for Oskar Schindler. We are Schindler Jews.
Who is Oskar Schindler?
He had a factory in Krakow. An enamelmaker.
A pot maker. How old are you, mother?
Schindler presents his list to the Auschwitz commandant.
You are not the only industrialist who needs labor. Herr Schindler. I remember earlier this year, IG Farben ordered a trainload of Hungarians for his chemical factory. The train came in through the archway, and the officer in charge of the selection went immediately to work and sent 2,000 of them straight away to special treatment. It is not my task to interfere with the processes that take place down here. Why do you think I can help you? If I can't help, Ige Farm.
Allow me to express the reason.
He empties a velvet pouch of sparkling diamonds onto the desk, then sits back and picks up a cigarette.
I'm not making any judgment about you. It's just that I know that in the coming months, we're all going to need portable wealth.
I could have you arrested.
I'm protected by powerful friends. You should know that.
I do not say I'm accepting them. All I say is I'm not comfortable with them on the table.
The Commandant brushes the diamonds into his hand and pockets them. Schindler finishes his drink.
I have a shipment coming in tomorrow. I'll cut you 300 units from it. New ones. These are fresh. The train comes, we turn it around.
Yes.
It's yours.
I understand. I want these.
The Commandant fixes a bromo seltzer.
You shouldn't get stuck on names.
He sits back and swirls it. Schindler eyes him.
That's right. It creates a lot of paperwork.
Soldinger Ernestina. Veldegrün Hinder.
A man in the compound reads off the list.
Last Anna. Pfefferberg Miller. Dresner Ruth. Dresner Danka. Nussbaum Sidomia. Rosner Manchi. Hirsch Helen.
The named women run forward. A guard marks their coats with paint. Then the female guards herd them toward a train. A guard grabs Danka. Mrs. Dresner rips her daughter out of the guard's grasp and keeps heading for the train. The women wait in line and climb up the plank ramps into the boxcars. Women pour into one boxcar, packing it shoulder to shoulder. A male guard carries a child away under one arm and clasps a little girl's hand with the other. A second, burly male guard grabs a teenaged girl and tears her out of the line. He lugs the writhing girl away. Passing the next line of women, he spots Danka Dresner and grabs her arm. He wrenches her away. Two women hold Mrs. Dresner back. Schindler strides toward the guards, herding the children away.
Hey! What are you doing? These are mine. These are my workers. They should be on my train. They're skin and munitions workers. They're essential. Essential, girls.
He grabs Danka's arm.
Their fingers polish the insides of shell metal casings. How else am I to polish the inside of a 45mm shell casing? You tell me. You tell me.
Back on the train! Back on the train!
The guards lead them to the train. Schindler lets out a deep breath as the boxcar doors close. Behind the barbed wire windows, the women gape in disbelief as the train rolls out of the camp. Near the tracks, a new group of Jews is led into the compound. Later, at the Brinlitz camp, the gate opens. Schindler's tall, broad-shouldered frame enters, walking among the Jewish women. Guards watch the women plod wearily past. Schindler walks behind a frail, limping group. Mrs. Dresner and Danka, Monsi Rosner, Helen Hirsch, and Mila Pfefferberg. The Brinlitz commandant stands off to one side and watches them grimly. Inside a barracks, the Jewish men peer through a window as their wives and daughters pass outside. Mr. Dresner and Levertov scan the women intently. Pfefferberg and Stern watch from another window. Stern backs away and dabs his nose. He sits at a desk, picks up a pen, and stares for a moment. Then returns to work. Outside, the SS troops gather around Schindler.
Under Department W provisions, it is unlawful to kill a worker without just cause. Under the business's compensation fund, I am entitled to file damage claims for such deaths. If you shoot without thinking, you go to prison, I get paid. That's how it works. So, there will be no summary executions here. There will be no interference of any kind with production. In hopes of ensuring that, guards will no longer be allowed on the factory floor without my authorization.
He turns to the commandant.
For your cooperation, you have my gratitude.
Cases of beer.
Come on, come. Come on, boys, come.
The commandant stares at him uneasily. Now in a large, opulent cathedral with a massive, intricately carved and gilded altar. Schindler walks in, crosses himself, and genuflects. He sits in a pew behind his wife, Emily. He leans toward her and folds his hands.
No doorman or maitre d' will ever mistake you again. I promise.
A faint smile creases her lips. Later, in his new factory.
Itzhak. This is Itzhak Stern, my accountant. Itzhak,
you must be Mrs. Schindler.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Emily has volunteered to work in the clinic.
Very generous of you.
I know.
We need to talk when you have a moment.
This is my wife, Stern. I don't keep any secrets from my
spouse. Oscar, please, attend to business. It's much more attractive.
She leaves him.
Hello.
What is it?
We've received an angry complaint from the armaments board. The artillery shells, tank shells, rocket casings. Apparently, all of them have failed quality control tests.
To be expected. Startup problems. This isn't pots and pans. This is a precise business. I'll write them a letter.
They're withholding payment.
Sure, so would I. So would you. I wouldn't worry about it. We'll get it right one of these days.
There's a rumor you've been going around miscalibrating the machines. They could shut us down, send us back to Auschwitz.
I'll call around, find out where we can buy shells. Pass them off as ours.
I don't see the difference, whether they're made here or somewhere else.
You don't see a difference? I see a difference.
Well, you lose a lot of money, that's the
difference. Fewer shells will be made.
Madame.
Stern, if this factory ever produces a shell that can actually be fired, I'd be very unhappy.
He pats him on the shoulder and strides off. Stern gapes, then trots briskly the other way. Now, a woman hands an artillery shell the length of her arm to Levertov, who polishes the inside of it on a machine. Schindler walks up, unnoticed, behind him.
How are you doing, Rabbi? Rabbi.
Levertov sets down the shell.
Good, Herr Director.
Sun's going down.
Levertov looks up, curiously.
Yes, it is.
What day is this? Friday? It is Friday, isn't it?
Is it?
Schindler leans into his face and stares at him.
What's the matter with you? You should be preparing for the Sabbath. Shouldn't you?
He starts to walk away. Levertov stares, speechlessly.
I've got some wine. In my office. Come.
Later, Levertov stands at a table with two candles. In the black and white scene, the Sabbath candle flames glow with yellow light. A dozen men circled the table. In the guards' barracks, the men stop undressing and look up toward the door. The commandant sits at a small desk. He glances up from his work. Now, over the yellow candle flames, words appear. For the 7 months it was fully operational, Schindler's Brinlitz munitions factory was a model of non-production. During this same period, he spent millions of Reichmarks to sustain his workers and bribe Reich officials. Later, Stern walks into Schindler's office.
What? Do you have any money? Hidden away someplace that I don't know about. No.
Stern takes a few tense breaths.
Why? Am I broke?
He sits down.
Well.
Later, the workers gather around a radio.
Yesterday morning, at 2:41 a.m., at General Eisenhower's headquarters, General Jodl signed the act of unconditional surrender of all German land, sea, and air forces in Europe to the Allied Expeditionary Force and simultaneously to the Soviet High Command. The German war is therefore at an end.
Schindler at the commandant's door.
I think it's time the guards came into the factory.
Schindler addresses his Jewish workers. The guards stand to one side.
The unconditional surrender of Germany has just been announced. At midnight tonight, the war is over. Tomorrow, you'll begin the process of looking for survivors of your families. In most cases, you won't find them. After 6 long years of murder, victims are being mourned throughout the world. We've survived. Many of you have come up to me and thanked me. Thank yourselves. Thank your fearless Stern and others among you who worried about you have faced death at every moment. I'm a member of the Nazi Party. I'm a munitions manufacturer. I'm a profiteer of slave labor. I am a criminal. At midnight, you'll be free, and I'll be hunted. I shall remain with you until 5 minutes after midnight, after which time, and I hope you'll forgive me, I have to flee.
He turns to the guards.
I know you have received orders from our commandant, which he has received from his superiors, to dispose of the population of this camp. Now would be the time to do it. Here they are. They're all here. This is your opportunity.
The workers shift nervously.
Or you could leave and return to your families as men instead of murderers.
A young soldier with a boyish face turns and leaves. Another soldier follows him. Then slowly, all the soldiers file out of the room. The commandant remains at rigid attention on a staircase. Mrs. Dresner looks above her as the last of the officers walks past the commandant. He stares hard at Schindler, hesitates, then reluctantly walks out. Stern watches with wide-eyed amazement. Schindler sighs, winks at Stern, then returns to the center of the platform, overlooking the workers.
In memory of the countless victims among your people, I ask us to observe 3 minutes of silence.
He crosses himself, bows his head, and folds his hands. The workers bow their heads. Rabbi Levertov stands in the middle of the room. Leo Rosner holds Mansi's shoulder. A young father lays a hand on his son's head. Mr. Nussbaum hugs his wife. Mila and Poldek Pfefferberg hold each other close. Mrs. Dresner rests her head against her husband.
Thank you, Mr. Yarov.
Later, a Jewish workman slugs down some liquor.
Thank you, Mr. Yarov.
Open wide.
Another worker opens Yarov's mouth.
Thank you, Mr. Yarov.
He inserts a pair of pliers. Later, the jeweler, Marcus Wolken, melts Yarov's gold crowns with a welder's torch. Mr. Dresner holds Mr. Yarov's arm. Yarov sways and smiles drunkenly and holds a handkerchief against his cheek. Mr. Dresner smiles at him.
Thank you, Mr. Yarov.
Wolken pours the melted gold into a ring-shaped mold. In their bedroom, Schindler and his wife throw clothes into suitcases. Back in the factory, Wolken turns over the mold, and a gold ring drops out. He slides it onto a sizing rod and shapes it with a small hammer. Nighttime. Stern accompanies the Schindlers to the train depot.
As soon as peace occurs, I want that cloth distributed to the workers. 2.5 meters each. Also, each person is to get a bottle of vodka. They won't drink it. They know its value. Likewise, those Egyptian cigarettes we organized.
It'll be done, everything you ask.
Schindler's workers wait for him at the depot. A few women kiss his hand. The men remove their caps. Schindler and his wife move slowly toward the waiting limousine. Hundreds of workers surround them. Schindler sets down his luggage. Rabbi Levertov presents him with a document.
We've written a letter trying to explain things in case you were captured. Every worker has signed it.
Schindler opens the letter and leafs through the pages of signatures.
Thank you.
He folds it up and puts it in his suit coat pocket. As he bends down to gather his things, Stern steps in front of him. With a gentle smile, he holds out the polished gold ring. Schindler stares at it, then takes it and peers at the inside of the band. His brow knits, and he looks to Stern.
It's Hebrew from the Talmud. It says, whoever saves one life saves the world entire.
He glances at his wife, starts to put on the ring, then trembles and drops it. He gropes frantically, finds it, and stands back up. Composing himself, he puts the gold band over his left ring finger and scans the workers. He slips the ring in place and looks at Stern with an unsettled gaze. He steps forward and holds out his hand. Stern grasps it, and they shake warmly with both hands. His smile droops.
You have no idea. If I just...
There will be generations, because because of what you did.
I didn't do enough.
You did so much.
Schindler looks at his sleek black limousine.
This car. Good would have bought this car. Why did I keep the car? 10 people right there.
He looks at the men and women nearby.
10 people. 10 more people.
He takes off his swastika lapel pin.
This pin. 2 people. This is gold. 2 more people. He would have given me 2 for at least 1. He would have given me 1. 1 more. 1 more person.
He collapses onto Stern's shoulder.
I could have got 1 more person. And I didn't. And I didn't.
Matsi Rosner rushes to his side and embraces him. Emily holds him from behind. More workers surround and embrace him. Mrs. Dresner picks up a large striped prison shirt and slowly unbuttons it. Later, Emily and Oscar climb into the limousine, disguised in striped prison uniforms. The car slowly follows a truck out of camp. The men and women flood behind the car's path. Oscar Schindler's glistening eyes stare out the window. In the reflection of the glass, we see the solemn faces of the Dresners, the rabbi, and the Pfefferbergs. Schindler stares at the stream of faces of Jewish men and women. Morning. The Jews lie sprawled across the ground inside the gate of the camp. A lone rider on a horse trots toward them. Just inside the gate, Stern sits up as the man approaches.
You have been liberated by the Soviet Army!
They rise to their feet. Stern steps forward.
Have you been in Poland?
I just came from Poland.
Are there any Jews left?
The man stares blankly at him.
Where should we go?
Don't go east, that's for sure. They hate you there. I wouldn't go west either, if I were you.
We could use some food.
Isn't that a town over there?
Later, shoulder to shoulder, they head across a wide, grassy field. Mr. Yareth walks beside a teenage boy. He swings his arms freely and scans the open horizon. A woman carrying a bundle smiles faintly. A tall man with a dirty, torn Star of David on his coat gazes steadily forward. They march forward resolutely. The scene changes to the abandoned Płaszów labor camp. Eamon Goertz stands on a stool underneath a gallows with a noose around his neck. His face blank, he slicks back his hair with his bound hands. A Russian soldier kicks at the stool. Another soldier joins him. The stool splinters apart and Goertz hangs. Words appear. Eamon Gert was arrested while a patient in a sanatorium at Bad Tölz. He was hanged in Krakow for crimes against humanity. More words as our view shifts to the enamelware factory. Oskar Schindler failed at his marriage and several businesses after the war. In 1958, he was declared a righteous person by the Council of the Yad Vashem in Jerusalem and invited to plant a tree in the Avenue of the Righteous. It grows there still. Now, the Jews crossing the wide grassy field dissolve into color footage of elderly men and women crossing a dusty plain. Words appear. The Schindler Jews today. Now, in a cemetery, the stone slab lid of a grave bears the name Oskar Schindler. A strong, white-haired man approaches, along with a young actor in modern clothes. The name Yannick Dresner appears as they each set a fist-sized stone on the top of the grave. The young actress who played Danka sets down a stone, along with a petite woman with short gray hair. Her name appears, Danka Dresner. Next, the actor portraying the jeweler approaches with an elderly couple. The actor and the black-suited man place rocks on the gravetop, Mordecai Wulkan. A dark-haired man in his 50s comes next, Richard Horowitz. A young girl and an older woman with coiffed auburn hair place their stones. Nyusha Horowitz, the little girl kissed at Schindler's birthday. Two young actors, along with a frail woman using a cane and her white-haired husband. Josef and Rebecca Bau, they place their stones. Mrs. Bau gently rubs the grave marker. A little boy actor approaches, holding hands with a fit, middle-aged Oleg Rosner. They carefully set their stones along the edge. A curly, gray-haired Monsi Rosner and her actress counterpart set down stones and move on. Henry Rosner, a gray-suited man with a thin mustache, steps up with his actor and they set down stones. A tall actor and an elderly couple, Leopold Rosner and his wife Helen. Mr. Rosner and his counterpart continue the row of stones along the grave marker's edge. Next, Mila Pfefferberg and her actress. Leopold Pfefferberg and his actor. Mr. Pfefferberg sets down his stone, touches the grave, and kisses his fingers. Actor Ben Kingsley and a short elderly woman wearing a white hat. Mrs. Itzhak Stern. They place their stones. Then Kingsley escorts her away. Helen Hirsch, with short reddish hair, and her actress. The slender actress who played Emily pushes the gray-haired Emily Schindler up to the grave in a wheelchair. The actress places both stones. Mrs. Schindler smiles pleasantly. Then the actress wheels her past. A stream of Schindler survivors pass by and set stones on Schindler's grave. The stones cover half of the grave's broad top. The line of Schindler Jews stretches across the entire cemetery. Words appear. There are fewer than 4,000 Jews left alive in Poland today. There are more than 6,000 descendants of the Schindler Jews. Later, stones cover the top, leaving the name and an engraved cross clear. A hand puts two red roses across Schindler's name. In a wider view, we see the tall, broad-shouldered actor Liam Neeson alone beside the grave. In memory of the more than 6 million Jews murdered. Credits appear over the road paved with tombstones. Directed by Steven Spielberg. Screenplay by Steven Zalian. Based on the novel by Thomas Keneally. Produced by Steven Spielberg, Gerald R. Molin, and Branko Lustig. Starring Liam Neeson, Ben Kingsley, Rafe Fiennes, Caroline Goodall, Jonathan Segal, and Embeth Davids. Executive producer Kathleen Kennedy. Director of Photography, Janusz Kaminski. Film edited by Michael Kahn, ACE. Production designer, Alan Starsky. Music by John Williams. Co-producer, Lev Revin. Violin solos by Itzhak Perelman. Costume designer, Anna Shepherd. Casting by Lucky Englander and Fritz Fleischbacher, Magdalena Schwarzart, Tova Seipin and Liat Marone, and Juliet Taylor. Unit production manager, Branko Lustig. First assistant director, Sergio Mamika Gazan. Second assistant director, Michael Helfand. Production associates, Bonnie Curtis and Karen Cushell. Consultant, Leopold Page. Associate producers, Irving Glovin and Robert Raymond. The cast. Liam Neeson as Oscar Schindler. Ben Kingsley as Itzhak Stern. Rafe Fiennes as Eamon Gert. Caroline Goodall as Emily Schindler. Jonathan Segal as Polek Pfefferberg. Embeth Davids as Helen Hirsch. Malgosia Gebel as Victoria Klonowska. Mark Ivanir as Marcel Goldberg. Beatrice Makola as Ingrid. Andres Severin as Julian Scherner. Norbert Weisser as Albert Huyar. Adi Nitzan as Mila Pfefferberg. Michael Schneider as Judah Dressner. Miri Fabian as Mrs. Dressner. Anna Mucha as Danka. Albert Misak as Mordecai Wulkan. Michael Gordon as Mr. Nussbaum. Aldona Groschal as Mrs. Nussbaum. Jacek Wojcicki as Henry Rosner. Beata Palucz as Monsi Rosner. Piotr Polk as Leo Rosner. Ezra Dagan as Rabbi Levertov. Beata Novak as Rebecca. Rami Hauberger as Yosef Bau. Uri Avrahami as Chaim Novak, the history teacher. Adam Simeon as Adam Levy. Wojciech Klata as Lisiek. Elena Lowenson as Diana Reiter. Bettina Kepfer as Regina Perlman. The International Crew, United States, Camera Operator Raymond Stella, ASC, First Assistant Camera Steve Tate and Steve Meisler, Second Assistant Camera Molly Mollinger, Production Sound Mixers Ronald Judkins, CAS, and Robert Jackson, Makeup Supervisor Christina Smith, Hair Supervisor Judith Corey, Unit Publicist Anne-Marie Stein, Still Photographer David James, Assistant Editors Alan Cody, Patrick Crane, Michael Falvolita, and Peter Fandetti. Gaffer Mauro Fiore. Key Grip Andrei Sobchak. Special Effects Coordinator Bruce Minkus. Prop Masters Bacia Grafka and Cesar Diaz Alava. Production Coordinators Michael Toyer and Jim Wiggins. Production Controller Jane Goh. Post Production Supervisor Martin Cohen. Post Production Coordinator Michelle Fandetti. Supervising Sound Editors Charles L. Campbell and Louis L. Edelman. ADR Supervisor Larry Singer. Re-recording Mixers Andy Nelson, Steve Peterson, and Scott Milan. Music Editor Ken Wanberg. Mr. Perelman accompanied by members of the Boston Symphony Orchestra. Clarinet solo performed by Giora Feidman. Poland. Heritage Films. Production Manager Mikhail Sterbich. First Assistant Director Marek Brodsky. Second Assistant Director, Krzysztof Bieranek. Set Decorator, Eva Brown. Art Directors, Eva Skoczkowska and Maciej Walczak. Set Dressers, Eva Tarnowska, Richard Maliwa, and Gregorz Piotkowski. Location Manager, Jan Janek. Production Consultant, Franek Polowski. Croatia. Production Manager, Milan Stanicic. Production Supervisor, Zdavko Mazarevic. Script Supervisor, Nada Pinter. Germany. Dialect Supervisor Osman Rageb. Austria. Production Office Coordinator Hilda Odelga. Assistant Production Office Coordinator Sandra Odelga. Israel. Production Supervisor Zvi Spielman. Production Manager Avner Peled. Production Coordinators Ronit Hian and Liat Marone. England. Makeup. Pauline Hayes and Jane Royal. Hair. Lisa Tomlin. UK Voice Casting, Brendan Donison. ADR Mixer, Mike Dawson. ADR Recordist, Jeff Mist. Filmed in Krakow, Poland. The producers wish to thank the mayor of Krakow and the people of Poland, the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and Andrzej Wajda. DTS in selected theaters. Copyright 1993, Universal City Studios Incorporated and Amblin Entertainment Incorporated. A film by Steven Spielberg. For Steve Ross. From Amblin Entertainment. This film has been described for blind and visually impaired audiences by Descriptive Video Service, WGBH Educational Foundation. Described by John Krinke. Descriptions read by Dave Gilbert. Major funding for DVS provided by the United States Department of Education. Funding for the description of Schindler's List provided by Amblin Entertainment and MCA Universal Home Video. DVS gratefully acknowledges the assistance of Rena Finder, Denise Shore, and Sam Natanson. Cantor Mindy Fliegelman, Eric Marr, and Rabbi David Starr. Lilo Anderson, Stefan Becker, Jan Darsa, and Karen Cushell. Rated R, Motion Picture Association of America.